Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! My goodness gracious, am I glad to be back behind the microphone. Welcome to this Monday edition of The Horn. It is the 28th day of September 2009. I am not fully back to speed, but you know what? One can only wallow around in the muck and the misery of the swine flu for so long before you have to come back to work. And as I suspect, you guys will probably make me feel better than you will worse, which is usually, I mean, that's always the case here. I feel kind of too icky to get behind the microphone, and I get behind the microphone anyway, and then you guys make me feel all better. So let's hope that continues to work in that fashion this evening. Now, I'm not kidding. Apparently, Agnes and I have had a nice, really high-quality dose of the swine flu. Although around here and around most of the country, you'll notice it isn't being called the swine flu anymore. No, children, no. Now it's an upper respiratory infection. And at the risk of getting some email from somebody who hates the mere mention of it, let me tell you where the light kind of went on for me. I was watching college football on Saturday, as is my wont in the fall, when I tuned over to the match between the University of Kentucky Wildcats and the Florida Gators, led by their Heisman Trophy candidate senior quarterback, Jesus H. Tebow. And, of course, the beginning of the story, the pregame babble, had to do with the fact that Jesus H. Tebow had been exposed to an upper respiratory infection earlier in the week and had to fly up on a separate plane so as to hopefully keep from infecting the rest of his team. He sort of self-quarantined in an act of self-sacrifice or something like that. You know, he's a big fundamentalist, you know, believes that the earth is slightly younger than the recipe for bread, that kind of guy. Jesus H. Tebow. And so I sat there listening, and something was going kind of sideways inside my tiny little mind. Because I kept hearing, because it was obvious that they were talking about the swine flu. Which, of course, if you're paying attention to your corporate communications memoranda from Smithfield Meat Company, the overarching food conglomerate giant that apparently runs just about every kind of meat in this country. The idea, we're this business about, well, you know, it's the miracle of the marketplace. Bull. There's no competition anymore. Four or five corporations own everything. Don't want to, you know, you're worried about the way Smithfield treats their hogs, so you think, well, you know, I'll get a different brand. I'll go get Cumberland Gap brand ham. Wrong. Smithfield owns them. Well, maybe I won't go with ham. Maybe I'll go have me a butterball turkey. Wrong! Smithfield owns them. Well, okay. How about some kielbasa and sauerkraut? Hey, Eckrich is a good brand. No, Smithfield owns them, too. This is, you see, for anybody who actually studies this kind of stuff, capitalism run wild eventually becomes communism. Unregulated capitalism eventually becomes a command economy where the one entity runs everything. like Walmart, like Smithfield. And so at some filthy lagoon full of pig goo somewhere in Mexico, the unmitigated, untrammeled desire for more holy profit bred up a viral yuck that has spread all over creation. And on Saturday, watching pregame coverage of Jesus H. Tebow and the Florida Gators, it was all, well, he has an upper respiratory infection that has struck a number of the Florida, University of Florida squad, and it's running around the nation, blah, 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 blah. And they won't say swine flu, which is what it is. Hell, they won't even say H1N1 anymore, because this pandemic is all over the blessed country. It is eating us up, and nobody's supposed to mention it. Hey. You see the 900-pound thing over in the corner, walking on its knuckles, eating a lot of bananas and celery? Don't talk about it. Our doctor told us that down in the little community at the foot of the mountain, some 20, 30 miles from here, that they have so many cases of this that they have stopped counting. I mean, at that point in time, if you're of a certain age and you're like me, this thing goes through your head where you hear, bring out your dead, wonk, bring out your dead, I'm not dead yet. I mean, it is. It's a pandemic. And it is killing some people. And the ones it's not killing, it is making awfully, awfully sick. See, the way this happened, well, if you go back and you listen to last Monday's program, you will hear me say, you know, I think it's allergy season. You'll hear me say that, you know, that my eyes are watering, my nose is running, and there's several, excuse me, I have to sneeze now, pauses and silences in the program that you could drive a truck through. Well, by the time Tuesday rolled around, it was pretty obvious that this was not any kind of allergy, because by then, my toenails were hurting. By Wednesday, I had coughed so much that I had bruised my own ribs, or pulled muscles in my ribs. Sweating, all just nasty, the works. Shh, don't talk about it. Then I get calls from folks who say, well, you know, I had a doctor's appointment on Friday. It was just a regular checkup. But I thought, hey, I'll go ahead and get my flu shot for this year. Only they didn't have any. They're out. Not enough was made for the beginning of the flu season starting so much earlier than it ordinarily does. Thank you, capitalist-driven pharmaceutical system. Thank you. Because that's working out real well, isn't it? Well, we didn't anticipate needing to make so much vaccine because we didn't anticipate making this kind of profit this early in the year. By Jove! Let us go out and have a lobster lunch somewhere that we can be taken to in our limousine and discuss the fact that we are missing out on some profits right now because people are sicker than hell with the flu and we haven't managed to capitalize on it. What will the quarterly profit and loss statement say, dear God? Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm gone for a week, and everything goes absolutely nuts. Yeah, the Freckles in the chat room tell me, yeah, the Bob, they sent a note today that we can get the flu shot at school for $30. There's signs up at Rite Aid around here. There's signs up at Kroger around here. Very here, there. You can get your flu shot here, and it all for $30. No, it's a daggum pandemic. And the shot should not be $30. The shot should be part of a universal, single-payer healthcare system. You walk up, you bare your sleeve, they swab you, they stab you, they plunge the stuff into you, you go along, and it's covered because you are a tax-paying citizen of the United States of America. You know, I kind of sympathize with an unnamed individual who questioned President Obama recently. I find this fascinating. Yeah, see, I'm not so interested in Iran's, oh, Jesus, they're going to melt us all tomorrow. Nah. Because I realize, I'm being a realist, I realize that Iran wants a nuclear weapon because everybody else has a nuclear weapon. But I feel a certain degree of kinship with a certain unnamed world leader who approached Barack Obama at the G20 summit and said to President Obama, "We don't understand it. You're trying to make sure everybody has health care, and they're putting a Hitler mustache on you. That doesn't make sense to me. Explain that to me." Well, as quick, sir, whomever you are, nameless and faceless, whichever G20 leader you are, as soon as they explain it to you, would you get a memo to the rest of us, please? Because I don't understand it either. Now, I mean, that's not to say that I don't understand the impetus behind it, because I certainly do understand the 20%ers, the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers. I understand them. I know what a loud, ignorant bunch of squealing pissants they are. Oh, I most assuredly understand that. But what I don't understand is why the rest of the country is tolerating it. While I was sick last week, they found the body. The nude body of a temporary worker for the United States Census hanged from a tree in Kentucky with the word "Fed" scrawled across his skin. And of course, we know the degree to which the monstrous morons like Michelle Bachmann have tried to fearmonger over the census. And I don't understand why there is not a public outcry. I mean, sure, the people, oh, really? They did that? That's terrible. I don't understand why there aren't 50,000 people marching on the state capitol in Frankfort, Kentucky, demanding an investigation, demanding a complete accounting of why this happened to an innocent individual who was doing nothing more than taking down demographic information. Kentucky. Kentucky. Meanwhile, also while I was sick, I got an email from our buddy David in Tennessee. And it was a photograph he had taken of a business card which he had just availed himself of from a bulletin board at a post office near his home in Tennessee. And it was a harrowing postcard. It was a hair-raising postcard. Not postcard, business card. Business card size. Very plain. White. One of those things that's as easy to print on your little inkjet or laser color printer or whatever. It was the content, of course. And it's as distressing as okay. here's what it says. White business card, red ink, big capital letters, K, K, K. We are bringing a message of hope and deliverance to America. Your white children are quickly becoming America's new minority. Send $3 for information on how you can help provide them a bright future. And it provides a box number in Harrison, Arkansas, and a couple of web addresses. And the organization to which one is to address one's envelope is Christian Concepts. Christian Concepts. So, in terms of mindset, in terms of geography, not very far at all from where a census worker was found hanged with the word fed scrawled across his dead body. Someone is posting business cards on post office bulletin boards that say K, K, K. We are bringing a message of hope and deliverance to America. There they are. Hope. There's that word again. Everybody got their own version of hope. Of course, I imagine they probably don't get the self-deprecatory humor in the idea, hope and deliverance. Ding, 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 ding. Cause, I mean, this is the Klan. This is, you know, big ears, buggy eyes, banjos, you know. Uncle Daddy! Yeah, the Klan. Recruiting. Coming to a post office. Near you. Disturbed? Don't know about you, but I am. Whew. What a week. What a week. And I'm so sorry for the amount of time that I missed that I was away. I did not enjoy not being on the air. I never do. This I enjoyed less than usual because it was, you know, you're sitting there bathed in a covered in a patina of your own sweat. And you keep reading and keep researching because that's your habit. And you read a headline that says, uninsured 22-year-old boner constituent dies from swine flu. And even though you feel weak as a kitten, you want to crawl out of bed and crawl to wherever some godforsaken, soulless, motherless, conscienceless repiglican is and just shake him. You dirty, rotten bastards. Sitting there trying to squeeze a little more profit out, trying to protect your cronies in the insurance and pharmaceutical industries, while 22-year-old beautiful young women are goddamn dying. Oh, it's one of those moments where you really hope for an afterlife, because you want to be there when the CEO of Cigna and Max Baucus come swanning up to the pearly gates together, arms locked in arms, looking deeply and lovingly into each other's eyes, and have St. Peter say to them, where in the do you think you're going, boys? Oh, we're going to heaven. We's rich. Oh, no, sunshine. I have an eternal lake of fire that was prepared for the devil and his angels, and baby, you swimming in it. You'd like to be there for that. But it's not real. It doesn't happen. And therefore, it falls to us, and it falls to you, and it falls to me to work our little asses off to defeat those sorry bastards here on planet Earth before they can defeat us. And the question is, what does that mean? The question is, what does it mean to speak for people like Kimberly Young from Oxford, Ohio, a graduate in this past December from Miami University there? Who got sick and didn't go to the doctor thinking, well, I'll get better. Her friend and former roommate Brent Mowry said she became ill about 2 weeks ago but didn't seek care initially because she didn't have health insurance and was worried about the cost. She's not a victim of the swine flu. She's a victim of John Boehner. She's a victim of Mitch McConnell. She is a victim of Max Baucus. She is a victim of Charles Grassley. She is a victim of Steve King. She is a victim of every no good, motherless, soulless, godless, conscienceless, repig-licking, and bought-off corporate Democrat in the Congress of the United States. And they, every last one of them, have her blood on their hands for the time that they have spent making sure that neither she nor anybody else in this country has universal single-payer health care available to them. God damn them. Mallory said that's the most tragic part about it. If she'd had health insurance, she would have gone to the doctor. The Kaiser Family Foundation says 30% of 19 to 24-year-olds are uninsured, and that is more than in any other group. That market is out of reach for health care coverage. It has been noted that in the 2008 study, the Commonwealth Fund found that 66% of young adults aged 19 to 29 who experienced a time without coverage in the past year said they had gone without it because of the cost. Not like these miserable right-wing punk-ass thugs claiming, well, you know, they think they're going to live forever, so they don't want it. No, they don't get it because they can't afford it, because they're working part-time or sometime or half-time at 6 or 7 jobs, because they're young and in the American dream, that's the way it works now. Young people, according to the Commonwealth Fund study, young people might have a better chance of accessing comprehensive coverage if there was a, come on everybody, 1, 2, 3, public option! It just makes you sick. First you weep and then you scream. And I don't know what it must be to be that poor young woman's family. God knows she couldn't go. She'd just graduated from Miami University. Probably had student loans. Probably struggling to keep up with the student monkey wolf, the student loan wolf off her porch. And a trip to the emergency room would have ruined her credit forever because there was no way she could make the payments. You know, This has been a challenging week to be away from the microphone, I assure you. Wow, what in God's name is driving by outside? Sounds like an M60 tank, M1A1 Abrams tank or something. Jiminy. Well, mercifully, it seems to be gone now. health care, though, of course, you remember, well, some of the most vociferous people speaking up against health care are in, of course, Texas. Of course, Texas also has the single largest uninsured population in the United States. That's largely because Texas is largely run by Republicans and so-called conservative Democrats. So naturally, Texas, which does everything bigger than the rest of, you know, everything's bigger in Texas. Over this past weekend, they held what is being hailed as the largest free clinic ever held in the United States, and in, it was, of course, in Texas. Thousands upon thousands of human beings showed up. More than 2,000 people came to the Reliant Center to get some sort of doctoring. ABC 13, a Houston area station, said, and this was the this is the words of their reportage: "It's an epidemic here in Texas in Harris County. People without insurance. On Saturday, the uninsured lined up to get their needs met." More than 2,000 people came to Reliance Center to see doctors for free. Many of the people we talked to can't afford health insurance, especially in the rough economy. Some say it shows the need for health care reform. Back to you, Susie, and the weather. One of the physicians who worked at the clinic this weekend was a doctor by the name of Mehmet Oz. He said, "We had no idea the overwhelming response we would have, the cries for help from the city of Houston and the state of Texas. This is the largest health mobilization in Houston since Katrina. So a national disaster which brought out this kind of response is now paralleled. So a natural disaster which brought out this kind of response is now paralleled by a national disaster, because this is just an average day in Houston, and there are thousands of people who need help." Well, the only thing missing from that scenario is that that hateful old beast Barbara Bush clutching her pearls, and, well, it's working out quite nice for them here. I just hope they don't stay. Well, sorry, Barbara, they already live in Houston. They're those people that you don't like to, you know, think about. And of course, this happens every year all the time. I mean, I know physicians and dentists who take time off from their practices to go and do these things. They had one in, Wise County, Virginia, you know, nowhere near the size of Houston, where again, thousands of people came because it was the only time they would have a chance to get, dentistry during the year. I guess it's, you remember, what was the phrase they used in MASH years ago? Meatball surgery? Yeah, this was meatball dentistry. No insult intended to the dentists who, well, they did it in West Virginia too. Last month, Parkersburg, 1,300 people showed up during one weekend of a free dental clinic. A few days later, the same thing happened with 1,500 people. For an 8-day free clinic, Remote Area Medical, an organization, had set up in Los Angeles. But, of course, I'm sure the right wing would gladly turn this on its ear to make the, well, you know, that just shows that everybody gets medical care in the United States. It was a hard, hard week.
a hard week to be away from the microphone. Made more so by virtue of the fact that apparently I was going through something that a lot of the country was going through. Not what Bill Sparkman went through. He was 51 years old when they found him swinging from a tree with Fed scrawled across his chest. Law enforcement told reporters that if they were treating it as an apparent homicide, Really, Dick Tracy? You need to investigate some more? You're looking for more evidence of how he wrote Fed on his chest before he bound his own hands behind his back and taped his feet together and hanged himself? Mr. Investigator, is it? FBI spokesman David Beyer said, "Our job is to determine if there was foul play involved, and that's part of the investigation, and if there was foul play involved, whether that is related to the employment as a census worker." Where's Kojak when you need it? Joe Friday. Because, you know, when the Fed hanged, you know, Bill, I think we may have a suicide on our hands. Oh, and there's plenty more where that came from. I have a feeling we're going to have a rousing good night. You, of course, are central to whether we have a rousing good night or not. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. You can always also reach the program via email. The email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. I look forward to it. Fire it up. We'll take a little break and we'll come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is, in fact, the Horn. And I may not be feeling great, but I'm Bob, and I'm back.
The only way I do, 'cause
Wow, it kind of just makes you want to, I don't know, river dance or something. That's isn't that basically the, I mean, that's, isn't that just kind of a little Irish jig there? I mean, yeah. Green Day. Thanks, John. This is the Monday night edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. And, you know, all the stuff that I just missed last week. What would you have given to be a fly on the wall when delegates walked out of the Godzilla from Wasilla? Former governor, former vice presidential nominee Sarah Palin's first speech. A U.S. delegate leaving early with a colleague said, "It was awful. We couldn't stand it any longer." And then, because he is, Jesus, because he is his mother's son, a tale coming, I got to get my hands on this book. I hate enriching right-wingers, but my God, this has got to be just one knee slapper after another. Speechless, Tales of a White House Survivor by former Bush administration Matt Latimer. He tells a story about, it comes from page 177, tells a story about dim leader giving his testimony about his personal struggles with alcoholism. Yeah, we kind of forgot about the fact that the president was a dry drunk during those 8 years, didn't we? Yeah, God knows he'd have been impeached for it if he'd been a Democrat. But Latimer reports it this way. He talked about his own failings with alcoholism as the reason he supported his faith-based initiative. My philosophy is find somebody who hurts and do something about it. Don't wait for government to tell you what to do. Yeah, I was beginning to love alcohol over my wife and kids. Jesus, if you were married, well, never mind. Suffice to say that, no, don't. It got to a point when Billy Graham came into my life. But I was hard-headed, and I didn't want to listen for a while. And then I stopped drinking overnight. Language is everything, isn't it? I stopped drinking overnight. That doesn't say I wasn't drinking right after breakfast, though, baby, because I was. I stopped drinking overnight. I'm a one-man faith-based initiative. Alcohol was competing for my affections, and it would have ruined me.
George?
Shh, it did. But your genes had something to do with it, too, buddy. But the story goes on in report, and I'm sure you've already heard this, but I just have to share it because it's one of those moments. Latimer writes, he said things that could ruffle feathers, such as how he'd recently gone to a faith-based program run by quote-unquote former drunks. He said he went to see a prison ministry program, noting that everyone was black, of course. And at the time he said this, all eyes turned in search of the lone African-American in the audience of donors. They wanted to see if he was offended. See, I went to this prison. I went to this prison ministry that was run by a bunch of former drunks. Everyone was black, of course. Yeah, what do you want from a man whose mother sat at the 1988 the Republican National Convention and was interviewed on television, and this was back when Jebby was a younger creepy Jebby, and his children were younger creeps too. And she pointed out, and she said, "And there's our George and his Laura and his two daughters, and there's Jebby and his wife and their children. We call them the little brown ones." Pearl clutch. Yeah. Everyone was black, of course. I was beginning to like alcohol more than I did my wife and my children. Well, George, you know, we've seen your wife and your children. You shouldn't have had some help. You shouldn't have been a dry drunk. You should have gone and gotten some support and, you know, reality spoken here and all of that stuff. And they might have helped you understand that you weren't entirely wrong. Might have worked through some of that stuff. Wow, because if you did the 12 steps, then you'd, God, how long would it take you, George, to write the million or so letters to the families whose people, whose children and aunts, uncles, brothers, cousins, sisters, fathers, mothers, wives, husbands? You know, because there's one of those steps where you go and you try to apologize to everybody you've harmed because you were such a stinking drunk. How long would it take you to write the letters, George? From those people you had killed, who had never done anything to us, but you had them murdered on a whim. How long would that take you, George? Rest of your life? I think you should devote the rest of your life to that. Yeah. Okay, so I've babbled on. I'm sorry, I had to get some of this out of my system. I've babbled on. Let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, what's up?
Not a whole lot here. You forgot to mention Glenn Beck and his frog-killing habit there.
I didn't actually forget that. This is Garrett, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't forget that, Garrett. That's good. That's just sitting around waiting to be its own little segment.
Yeah, don't you think? And then he tried to pass it off in the same show as fake. As, like, if it's fake, you don't look into the pan to see why he did, why it didn't leap out.
Well, it may have been a con job. I'm not willing to say that it was a well set up piece of shtick, but what I got out of it was. This business about his response to it, because he had to come back and explain that it was all a bit the next day and went to great pains, and then he showed a YouTube video that he says unfairly edits out to show and leaves out the part where he says it was a rubber frog, and he is so at a loss for any sense of irony that he didn't understand that the person on YouTube had just done to him what he has done to countless others. That is, selectively edit things to make it say what he wants it to say. And he wasn't able to comprehend that because he's just kind of that way.
Well, of course, it's always wrong. It's okay if you're Republican.
Right. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R.
Oh, yes. But you're right. This past week has just been one of those crazy weeks. And then there's the John Kyle and the shouting fest that he had in that committee meeting over his little amendment to Baucus's bill. I mean, that one was priceless.
It's been. Trust me, you don't want to be reading about any of this stuff going down when you've got a fever. And you don't want to be whacked out of your mind on cheap cough syrup when it's going on either, because then you have those nasty weirdo dreams about it, and all of the little Republicans are coming at you in your sleep and you can't fight them off, and it's yee.
Pink elephants?
No, mean Republicans.
Oh, that's even worse than pink elephants on parade.
Yeah, the pink elephants only come to visit when you're trying to, well, like, you know, George Bush being an overnight success story for not drinking alcohol. Yeah, that no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, sure. Overnight. That's why he just, you know, he just acts like it. I mean, my freshman year in college, there was somebody in one of the other dorm rooms that was, you could tell he had fetal alcohol syndrome because he had the certain habits. And Bush has them. It's just that, you know. And so it's obvious what's going on with Bush. Not only did his mom probably drink, he probably drank himself. I'm surprised.
Oh, are you kidding? That hateful old beast Barbara was probably quaffing martinis while she was delivering.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, but it's just, and are you sure you weren't in New York covering the Red Sox-Yankee game for Fox? Because when you were doing the announcer voice, you sounded like the whole 3 hours of that baseball game.
Oh, was it awful?
Oh, my God. Because it was, you know, since Joe Buck, he can't cover two events in consecutive days, you know, for whatever reason. They have a stand-in for him, you know, that gets to play with Tim McCarver. Ugh, that's a horrible job. But, yeah, it's just like I was considering turning on the XM radio and listening to the Yankee radio feed with John Sterling and Susan Waldman. That's bad because they're horrible. That's how bad it was on Fox.
You know, I remember when John Sterling worked for the Braves, and he wasn't bad, but he was certainly no Skip Carey, rest his soul. And he was no Ernie Johnson, but he moved on and got the gig with the Yankees. And John Sterling always just struck me as kind of, what, sterile?
Sterile, plus he has, everything is like a catchphrase. I mean, is one of, you know, it's like the 9 games that the Red Sox have to play in Yankee Stadium. Since, you know, it's not even worth getting all the Red Sox games and on TV because, oh, there's like about 6 to 8 teams that claim Las Vegas as a home territory. So you're missing out a certain number of games there already. And, oh, you know, plus you don't get it on Saturdays. And Saturdays, if it spills over into Fox time and all that. So it's like, so I have to, you know, use the XM. You know, and it's like, so you get to hear, since they only do the home feeds, you get to hear all the other teams' announcers.
Oh, nice.
He's the worst by far. I mean, there are some good announcers on the radio, but he's awful. He's the worst by far. I mean, it's just,
well, you know what changed baseball announcing is television, Garrett. Because the great ones, the Red Barbers and even the Harry Careys, and I grew up with Ernie Johnson and the Braves. They started out on radio, and they had to make things, and they didn't have the little picture box to make things come alive for them. It's just not the same. And those days are gone because those radio guys just don't exist anymore.
I mean, at least with baseball, some of them do hold out that, you know. I mean, like for the Red Sox, the number two guy is Dave O'Brien. So, you know, you can tell the difference between when he's covering the TV for ESPN and that. I mean, it's a lot more sparse on TV, the call. I mean, whereas, you know, you get the description, you actually get descriptions. I mean, you know, but like with Sterling, it's like, you know, the same exact call every time there's a home run. Like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it's like it's going over the very same section of wall. So, I gather, Garrett, that you are a Sox fan.
Yes.
And holding out any hope for the wild card? I mean, obviously they're going to...
They're going to clinch it there.
No, I know what I mean. Let's see, who are they going to play? They'll play either the Angels or the...
They'll play the Angels.
Okay, that's fixed. Okay.
Yeah, it's set in stone. And, well, the Angels, let's see what happens to the Angels every time they face the Red Sox in playoffs. They lose. So, you know. So it's hopefully, you know, hopefully the Twins or the Tigers, whichever one makes it against the Yankees, you know, saves the trouble of having to deal with the Yankees.
Well, you know, it's that time of year, and God help me, I love baseball's postseason. I love baseball in general. I'm sure I'll get nasty emails for even having this conversation. But, Garrett, I think it's okay because I'm forever looking at the areas that we as so-called liberals or progressives, whatever name we care to apply to ourselves, the things that we have let go by, the places that we have ceded to the right wing. And, you know, the reason that most sports talk and everything, that's, you know, the callers are right wing and everything, is because liberals we're above all that.
And that's ridiculous. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, the reason why sports is such a mess at times is because there aren't any liberals to say, take a firm stand. I mean, if football had liberal owners, Michael Vick would still be looking for a job. I mean, yes, he deserves a second chance, but immediately after leaving jail?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Or, well, it, yeah. And, of course, PETA was out there outside the stadium yesterday protesting Michael Vick. Good for, yeah, and good for them.
Yeah.
And, frankly, it would suit me fine if, you know, PETA's been known to get kind of cranky with people. If they'd go and throw some, oh, I don't know, swamp water or something on, or maybe boiling water. How about boiling water? I wouldn't put it past PETA to throw boiling water on Glenn Beck.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, there are a lot of people that aren't, I mean, hell, even some liberals get on PETA's case. But the thing is that they, you know, they do speak for, you know, animals, and animals kind of can't talk human. You know, last I checked.
Yeah, this is not Dr. Doolittle, and we're not going to, if I could talk with the animals. You know, for
yeah,
Glenn Beck is, yeah, you know, the only thing that was really missing from that segment was to have Ted Nugent there to eat the frog.
Well, it was too little of a frog. It was a very tiny frog.
That's true, I mean, it was. You know, and for that, you know, that would have just been a little morsel snack for Ted.
I'm surprised nobody, remember the first Muppet movie? I know. Where the whole plot of it is that Doc Hopper character wants to, you know.
Gosh, yes.
Yes. Well, I'm surprised, you know, because Beck does kind of look like Doc Hopper. I'm surprised nobody's gone there yet.
Oh, give him a chance, because I was so pleased. One of the fun things that I missed in being gone from here for a week was the little mashup that happened when somebody realized that there was much fun to be had out of the out of the business with not named Joe Wilson, and his, you know, his scream out to the world during President Obama's speech. Our pal Michael, known as Kid A in the chat room, sent me along a link from YouTube, of course, and he said, he sent this along, and it was just too precious. And everybody who knows the patron saint movie of this program will immediately get this. And again, this is something I missed because I was sick, and I just have to share it now because it was so confounded funny.
And our reform efforts would ensure illegal immigrants. This too is false. The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegally.
That's what you said last time, dipshit.
I got a solution. You're a dick. South Carolina, what's up?
It had to happen, you know. Especially the South Carolina, what's up? That was from the joint address to the House of Representatives from Idiocracy.
Yeah, I still need to see that freaking.
Oh no, you haven't. Oh God, well.
Yes, I know. I'm bad. I mean,
you must. You simply must.
It's. I mean, I have so many movies. I have even ones I have on DVD that I still haven't gone through. I'm bad. I'm horrible at that. I mean, but that's. I mean, because. And the thing is, though, it'll probably be just, it's getting to the point where it'll be like when it first saw Network. It's like, this is a comedy?
It's going to be an absolutely transformative moment for you, Garrett, because you're going to see so much of the Pig Licking Party in the 500 years from now future that Mike Judge sort of envisions. Do that. Make a promise to yourself. That happens in the next 24 hours. Idiocracy. You just got it, Garrett, because just based on the conversations we've had, I know you're going to go wild.
Yeah, I know. I need to, at some point, hunt it down. But, yeah, because it's just everything I've heard about, and not just here, but heard about it, is just like that it's...
But, you know, then there's some reality video. This business of Glenn Beck going on some web-only broadcast with Katie Couric. Are you familiar with this?
I heard about that. I had I, didn't sit down to watch it because Katie Couric is bad enough, but with someone as nuts as him.
But the thing was, she sat there. Well, A, Glenn Beck, why would she want to? But then again, we're talking about him and we're giving him free publicity. But she sat there offering him an opportunity to define his own phrase, okay? The quote was, Obama has a deep-seated hatred for white people or white culture. So, you know, little cutesy Couric, who is about as threatening as, a fluffy kitten, gives Glenn Beck the chance to explain what he meant. And this is one not to be missed, Garrett. I mean, we'll share it together.
Your question is, Adrian from Florida said, what do you mean by white culture?
I don't know.
You said he had a deep-seated hatred for the white culture. What is that? What is the white culture?
Just, gosh, I'm so tempted to help make news here today.
Well, no, I'm just curious. This was actually Adrian from
what
Florida.
What to do?
What a smug bastard, Adrian. You know, Garrett?
Yeah, go to GlennBeck.com. Listen to him.
Yeah. He knows there's no right answer. So instead he plugs the website. Did you catch that? Well, you can go to GlennBeck.com and you can listen.
All of it.
No, but you didn't really address white culture, I think, in your explanation about President Obama. I haven't seen the whole show, but can you just, for our purposes?
Just for your purposes?
Yeah.
This will be a little secret between us?
No, for this show. Can you explain what you mean by white culture?
I mean, that just opens it up for them because they use that you take me out of context argument. I hate that argument.
Passionately, yes.
It's like you took me out of context. It's like, I'm sorry, but, even if you, do like Glenn Beck did with the frog, later on after the commercial break with the frog or, with the whole oligarchy,
Yeah.
The fact is that, you can take the just huge chunks. We're talking like 10-minute chunks and it'd be like, you're taking me out of context. That's like, it's a total BS argument because it's like, you need to watch my whole show. It's like, I watched your whole show. I did Mystery Science Theater.
I'm a professional journalist. I watched it, Mr. Beck.
And it's like, and he'd still say, you got it out of context because the argument is bankrupt. He knows it. When he's talking white culture, he's getting on about, the image that conjures into my head is the worst of, images of the worst of, like, darky imagery from, like, 30s movies and stuff. Just that type, Birth of a Nation, stuff like that. That's what I get from white culture when I hear that phrase.
I'm not even going to try to figure out what that brings up for me, but, yeah. Hey, Garrett, I got to roll along. We got them stacking up, but good to hear from you, brother.
Yeah, good to hear you.
And I'm so happy to be back, and tell you what, we'll keep our fingers crossed for your Red Sox.
Well, yeah, they start in 10 minutes. They get to pound the Blue Jays and then the Indians and then the playoffs.
Exactly, but it's almost here.
Yep.
Anything that, well, no, I don't want to make the New York audience mad either, so shh, we won't tell anybody that I'm not a Yankees fan, okay?
Well, there's a team of Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney has been in the old Yankee Stadium wearing a Yankee hat in George Steinbrenner's booth. I mean, come on, that's sign enough, just saying.
Signs of the apocalypse. Garrett, take care.
Oberman's the only liberal Yankee fan I know of.
I think there's a couple of others, but Olbermann comes by it honest. The Billy Crystal, he's liberal.
Yeah, true enough. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it seems like more, at least on the liberal talk circuit, more Red Sox fans than anything. I mean, Rachel's a fan, and Sam Cedar, total Boston sports fan.
Oh, Sam's. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, when he, you know, had his shows, he, you know, do the webcam, and you could see he had a big Tom Brady poster, and it was always mentioning Sox on his Sunday show and all that, so. Because he's from the Boston area, I think.
Yeah, I was raised to respect Ted Williams. Even though my father didn't care much for the American League, he had profound respect for Ted Williams, and I was raised on it. So, you know, stay in the
It's usual. Hard not to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Garrett, take care, and we'll be rooting.
Yep.
All right, later.
Later.
Bye now. And just to, we will go right back to the phones in a second. Just to finish off with Glenn Beck and Cutesy Couric, you can go to my website, says Beck.
Because some people might say that sounds kind of racist.
Now, wait a minute. See, that's Cutesy Couric working out of the Fox style manual. Some people might say. No, you look at him and you say, I submit, if you're a journalist, I submit to you, Mr. Beck, that because remember, she's working for Murrow's Network. That's when you look at him and you say, at the end of the day, sir, have you no decency? Have you no shame?
Really? It's amazing to me that for the first time, I think, in history, somebody can ask a question and say, don't you think that maybe we have several pieces here? We have several pieces. George Bush says, my grandmother was a typical African-American that had her views bred into her. You don't think maybe we would ask questions about that comment? How is it that the first time...
His mother said what she said about the Katrina victims, and nobody asked questions about that.
I think in history you should check on it. Somebody says, hey, there's some red flags here maybe we should look at, has become the target. How am I?
What are the red flags? God almighty!
How am I the target for asking questions?
People just want to know, what is white culture?
Let's see if I can play your game. People just want to know.
You know, well, Adrian wants to know.
That's good for Adrian.
No, but I mean, it's fine. If you make a statement, though, shouldn't you be able to defend exactly what you mean by it?
Katie, how many times have you said something where you're like, I didn't think, what's the white culture? I don't know, what's the white culture?
She hasn't. There's the answer, Glenn. She
what?
Didn't. You
what's
did.
What's the white culture? I don't know how to answer that. That's not a trap.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not trying to trap you. I think people wanted to know what that meant exactly.
Oh, we know Adrian does.
Yeah, and you're not going to answer her?
I'm not going to get into your soundbite
well,
gotcha
no,
game,
we're,
which
we're,
we already are.
We're actually, this is completely unedited. So if you felt like you wanted to explain it, you have all the time in the world.
Mm-hmm.
No? Don't want to go there? But basically, you stand behind your assertion that, in your view, President Obama is a racist.
I believe that Americans should ask themselves tough questions. Americans should turn over all the rocks and make their own decisions.
Now, just what the hell does that mean? Really, we have to turn over rocks to find information about Barack Obama? What is the implication behind that? That he's reptilian? That he is insect-like? You know, this stuff really, really does have meaning. It's worth remembering that talking to Glenn Beck, it was Michelle Bachmann who talked about how scary census workers are, how dangerous they are. And now we have seen another one of those godforsaken trees bear its strange fruit. Oh, there's more. There is more. There is more in abundance. But we will go next to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot more.
Yeah, hey, Susan.
I was interested to hear you talking about the Call of the Dead cart.
Yeah.
Since apparently this country has also come up with, it's resurrected another custom from merry old England.
To wit?
It's called the debtor's prison.
How so?
Apparently, there is such a thing as called a body attachment. And that is a fancy term for if you get sick and can't pay the bill, they toss you in jail.
Jesus.
Otherwise known as debtor's prison.
Oh, well, and let's see, under the Patriot Act, we've already got the Court of Star Chamber, so, you know.
Yeah. Welcome back to the 18th century England.
Try the 16th.
Well, also the 17th too, and 18th. It lasted for quite a while. It was one of the reasons why people left that country. Another thing, there's an article up on Huffington Post that is just appalling. A woman in, I think it's Tennessee, but I'm not sure. She has Lynchburg syndrome. It's a rare genetic disorder. And it's causing her to go blind. Now, that's bad enough. There is a treatment for that. But her Blue Cross Blue Shield plan only pays for 80% of that, so she has a $380 a month after insurance copay. Every six weeks, she needs one of these shots to keep what little is left of her sight. The problem is she has two daughters, and they both have the same condition. She's decided to go blind and take the money that would be spent on her care and put it towards her daughters.
What a hell of a choice.
Yep. Yeah, it's just... Oh, she's in Florida. Why am I not surprised? She's got very little sight left, but the very last piece of light that she can see is going to go if she stops getting these injections. And she's doing it because she wants her daughters to be able to see. And I put it to everybody that she shouldn't have to be making that kind of choice. And I echo your sentiments. God damn you.
Yeah. While they sit around trying to figure out how we are best going to protect the avaricious industry that has destroyed the healthcare system, people are dying. People are suffering. This is not an academic exercise.
Yeah, they're going blind, they're dying, they're going into jail because of a debt they can't pay. This one guy in Tennessee, he was put in jail for a $1,200 debt because he caught a cold, and he happens to be diabetic, which landed him in the hospital.
Dear Lord.
This is obscene. So I ask everyone, please, tomorrow, get on the phone to your local congressional delegation. When you call your senators, ask them to get behind Senate Bill 1681. That is the Health Insurance Industry Antitrust Enforcement Act. When you call your representative, ask him to get behind and co-sponsor H.R. 3596, That is the Health Insurance Industry Antitrust Enforcement Act of 2009. What these bills are, their companion bills, what they will do is they will strip the antitrust exemption from the health insurance industry. And when that happens, the Sherman antitrust law can be used to bust these companies up, because right now they are monopolies. And if they are no longer exempt, then they can be busted up into itsy, itsy little companies.
They could all be little co-ops, can't they?
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but that would warm the cockles of my heart. They would have so much, they would spend so much trouble, so much time, and so much money fighting being busted up that they wouldn't have time to fight insurance reform.
It would certainly keep them busy.
Yeah. So let's get these two bills through Congress. And on.
And the bill numbers again are?
It is S-1681 and H-R-3596. We have Senator Patrick Leahy and John Conyers to thank for these.
And let's see, they're Democrats, right?
Yeah, call them up.
They've been out, any idea how long these bills have been out there?
They were just filed recently.
And have they been referred to committee or anything?
Yeah.
Any idea what committees they're in?
Oh, dear. No, I don't.
That might be a nice follow-up, Susan. Because...
You get on the phone tomorrow.
Let us know what committee they're in. And, you know, hopefully people will do their telephone advocacy. You know, it's some degree of activism at the very least. I know there are folks who will pick up the phone on this.
But call them. Keep calling them. I'm calling every day.
Good.
It went up, they were filed sometime last week. So, get busy, folks. We don't want these bills to sink. And call your representatives and say, hey, get on board with these. It's not going to cost you nothing.
Good. Good idea. Susan, thanks a million.
You're more than welcome, and it's nice to have you back.
I'm thrilled to death to be back. I just hope, you know, goal A, make it through this 3 hours. Goal B, be back tomorrow.
And go see, make sure Agnes comes along with you.
Oh, yeah, she's miserable, too, and more miserable because, Freckles was after me, sent me an email and said, tell Agnes to go to bed. I said, I have been married to her for almost 17 years, and the one thing that I've learned in those 17 years is not to tell Agnes to do nothing.
Agnes is one of those people that she's like me. She believes anything worth doing is worth overdoing. So when she gets sick, she gets really sick.
Yeah, and continue. She's like an athlete. If you've ever seen a coach look down at a boy who just turned his ankle, get up and walk it off, son. You got to walk it off. It'll get stiff if you don't walk it off. Walk it off, son. Well, Agnes just, you know, gets sick and she's gonna work it off. She's gonna work the virus to death.
Mm-hmm. That's Agnes.
I love her. But, you know, most I can do is try to hold her down and make her take several swallows of cheap cough syrup and hope that knocks her out.
We'll have to see if we can't get her some comfort and joy.
That sounds lovely. Susan, take care, dear.
You too.
All right. Bye
now. Nice.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. News Ninja Susan with something that we can do to put a little fear into the for avarice, agony, illness, misery, and death industry. Yeah, yanking that Sherman antitrust exemption, it sounds like a good idea. This in from David in Tennessee regarding Michael Vick. Punish Vick more? No, absolutely not. Vick has done 20 months hard time. He's lost over $50 million in cash, not future income, cash. He lived out a horrid behavior that had been offered to him as acceptable since his birth. Very true. Long-standing friends and associates of Vick's reinforce the propriety of that terrible activity. He is making an honest effort after his other repayments. The man's paid enough. Enough, damn it. Enough. He's done all right to this point. Let's let him play out his hand in an honest attempt to rehab himself. And if in fact we do believe that one pays one's debt to society in prison and then comes out with a clean slate, I think David has a valid point. Consider, if you will, there was a moment where Michael Vick was interviewed over the weekend, and he said he was asked to comment on Plaxico Burress, who was heading off to prison for shooting himself in the leg. You know, possessing a firearm in New York where you're not supposed to. Right. And it was noxious, as so much sports coverage is. The interview was by Sal Palantonio for ESPN. What advice would you have for Plaxico Burress, Michael? And all Michael could say was, you know, well, just, you know, that ain't, he's got to learn that that's not him. Prison is not him. What? How do you answer a question like that? Then there's that famous alumnus of the my alma mater, West Virginia University, Pac-Man Jones, who had firearms shot at people, for whom someone I think is in a wheelchair for life over some firearms play that went down somewhere around a strip joint in Vegas. Pac-Man is still on the street. Then there's Ray Lewis, arguably involved in an outright murder. Super Bowl night in Atlanta, walking the streets. Now, no one can speak for the animals, but if there's to be any sort of equal concept of equal justice, then yeah, David's right. Michael Vick has paid his debt to society, and there are others worth focusing our ire upon. And that will be part of Michael Vick's biography, and it will be part of his obituary whenever it happens. Hopefully, you know, decades down the road, convicted for running a dogfighting ring. But it's also cultural. And don't tell Glenn Beck, but that whole cockfighting, dogfighting thing down south, that's part of that white culture he didn't want to define. Shh. And that white culture uses dark-skinned people as the facilitators of their little, sporting avocations. How's that? Yeah. And back we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
How are you? I kind of agree with you. I love animals, but I agree with you about Michael Vick and what's going on there. But I just want to tell you something that and the last lady that was on there, your last caller there, talking about the health care issue. That is a national security issue, but I'm talking about national security because I just got the latest Loose Change 9/11, an American coup DVD, and I just watched all of it. It's powerful stuff there, Bob, that they need an investigation. This is not like the murder of one man, God rest his soul, John F. Kennedy, but they covered that too in Loose Change, and they started with the Reichstag fire, Hitler's own 9/11. In February 27th, 1933, and how he took advantage of that. They tried to set it up with some retarded, half-blind Dutch communist guy. They used him. They beheaded that poor man. They made him out to be. But they know, the historians now know, that the Nazis were running through the hallways. They laced the whole Reichstag building with chemicals and gasoline, and then they just set the blaze with the using the shirt from this poor, retarded Dutch man. It's disgusting, and then they go off from there to the Kennedy assassination, the Pearl Harbor attacks, And I don't necessarily agree with him on the Pearl Harbor. I think Roosevelt, I think radar was in its infancy. It was possible that they got through undetected, but there's still, there more should have been done. And if they want to raise Pearl Harbor again too, and if it gets to the truth about September 11th and anything, and John F. Kennedy's killing, any of it, there's no sacred cows, Democratic, fellow Democrat named Franklin Delano Roosevelt, anybody, when it comes to human truth and the truth of who killed all those thousands of American lads on Pearl Harbor and who killed, treating them like dogs, having to fight for the survival in the Twin Towers and the World Trade Tower 7, those nearly 3,000 people killed on that date. That's what this Bush regime has done. It covered also in 1934 this latest Loose Change movie did, Bob, about the Prescott Bush and the rest of the DuPont family and the rest of these people. 1934 was Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine ever. They were involved in a coup attempt against Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Brian, there's no, and that's the thing. I hate, there are some things that I hate to see get intermixed with other things. Because the coup against FDR was real.
Yeah.
And Smith,
they
you know,
prosecuted.
And it was all swept under the rug that 1934 coup. But Smedley Butler, you know, was not a man to make stuff up. I resist the business about FDR quietly let Pearl Harbor happen.
No.
Simply because we know what the technology was at the time. And frankly, it is an ongoing attempt to smear FDR, even in his grave. It's an attempt to smear him by the people who hated him then. The same crowd.
You got to get at least on one level. You got to remember that those Japanese pilots. There was a military on military attack. Our people. It goes a lot of the not just the, you don't just go by the generals then General Short. And Admiral Kimmel there, and then commanding Pearl Harbor, but all over they expected the Japanese, because of our own racist opinion of the Japanese, we expected them, they could only at most attack the Philippines with a surprise attack. They did not ever expect them, really, most all of our military minds, prior to December 7th, 41, did not expect them to be capable of attacking that far west, to the Hawaiian, it was then an island, then an American Commonwealth or property or whatever, but it was not a state then, but they still did not expect them to attack that far. They thought the Philippines and basically the land invasions then, of course, did occur in the Philippines by the Japanese. They swept over Asia, Burma, the Malay Peninsula. But it was a military on military attack at Pearl Harbor. September 11th was well known ahead by Marvin Bush heading to security inside the World Trade Center. There's so many connections. This is the most powerful Loose Change documentary that they have made so far. They have drawn it all together. It's the Operation Paperclip from World War II, where we took the 100 Nazi scientists, rocket scientists, right out of World War II Germany from May 45 onwards, even before then perhaps, not to let them fall into the Soviets' hands. The fact is that there is so much dirty. Prescott Bush, his union banking was dealing with the Nazis. You folks go to NewHampshireGazette.com. John Buchanan's great work there on the Bush family. They're dealing with the Nazis up through from 1942 to 1951.
Oh, yeah. Brian, the thing is, you know, the records of the conviction of Prescott Bush under the Trading with the Enemies Act is in the National Archives. It happened in 1943. It is verifiable. But could you get anybody in the last in the couple of years leading up to during his candidacy? Could you get anybody to take what John Buchanan did and do some so-called mainstream journalism on it? Oh hell no!
That's truthful history that Mr. Buchanan has found there at the National Archives and the Library of Congress. That's the fact. It's disgusting. I haven't been calling. I've had my own dealings with major utility companies, Bob, in the last, and I'm still trying to clear it up there with it. They destroyed my septic tank driving over with their heavy equipment. But, I'm still trying to clear up that situation. But probably, I know for your poor folks in West Virginia there, that with their orange-colored water and the rest of it polluted water, they're telling me, Brian, you big baby, you don't know nothing, white boy, about what the real suffering is at the hand of the utilities or power companies or coal companies. But that's what I've been going through, and I haven't been able to listen or call into your show for a while now because of that. I've been trying to clear that situation up. But the corporate power, again, it gets back to the same thing. The corporations in the 1930s, they loved Adolf Hitler's model. You know, that was before the early to mid-30s, you know, the Reichstag fire, early 1933, that's where they cemented, Hitler was able to cement his rule, his fascist rule, his Nazi rule, dictatorship. The Gulf of Tonkin incident, the phony, there were no North Vietnamese boats anywhere in that area. There was no attack there in early August 1964. That's how Lyndon Baines Johnson got his Gulf of Tonkin resolution to unleash war for the war profiteers upon North Vietnam and in Cambodia and Laos for trillions of dollars there for that lie-fueled war. And, you know, another thing, folks, read a book by John M. Newman. He's a former CIA and military intelligence guy, JFK in Vietnam. He says, he lays it out that the only man really in the high offices of the Kennedy administration who was against escalating the war and who started to bring out the 1,000 troops out of South Vietnam was John F. Kennedy himself. And look what happened to him on November 22nd, 1963. This cabal in Washington, Bob, it stinks more and more, and I think that there's still this, for all I pray every day for Barack Obama and his young family and his beautiful wife and his beautiful kids that he doesn't end up in any kind of like a Dallas November 1963 scenario. I pray for his personal health, first of all, because one man can't bring all of this down and stop all of the bastard profiteering and fiends that what they've done to what used to be the great American Republic.
Well, Brian, I don't know if I don't know if this has reached your attention yet, but let me share something with you real quick.
Okay.
This past Saturday, a poll was posted on Facebook.
Okay.
The name of the poll was "Should Obama Be Killed?"
Oh my God.
It was noticed yesterday by a blogger named Gotta Laugh. And it was called into the Secret Service immediately, and they've launched an investigation. Facebook has pulled it down.
Good. Well, that's good.
And they've disabled the third-party application that was used to send it literally all over Facebook, you know, the millions upon millions of users. And here's the poll.
Freedom of speech, even on the internet, of course, it's got some limits. That's what it's become. The dialogue with the corporatized phony news media. I've always put the in place of the S, the dollar sign news media on television nowadays, where people are so dumbed down, their attention span is dimwits that try to pass themselves off as American citizens. That's why another one of their flock, their kind, this lobotomy malpractice case named Glenn Beck, he can get away with the smarmy stuff he pulls. He talks about killing Michael Moore and thinks about, well, you know, maybe Jesus would want to kill Michael Moore even. Maybe even the Prince of Peace would want to do that. That's what he basically was saying. Mike Malloy nails it, that these people on their phony rhetoric, that it's fascist rhetoric. It's the same thing as the Bund Party in America in the 1930s. That's what Glenn Beck is today, his lies. He assigns his own fascist hatred onto liberals and social Democrats and people that are truly progressive and evolutionary people. They want to evolve our species and our nation and our people. But we can't do that until we get the real truth about 9/11. That's what gives them the pretext for a bastard like Glenn Beck to get away with what he does, Bob. They're going over this latest loose change. Mr. Barry Jennings, he was one of the, he's another African-American man there. He's coming out of World Trade Center 7. He heard explosion for hours. He was trapped in there. They have the video footage of him where the firefighters, they had to go in and try to get to him. Then the first tower came down. They had to flee the area. Then they came to him again. Then the second tower came down within a few minutes after that. They had to get out of the area again. Then they finally got back to him at World Trade Center 7 tower, that is. And that was that finally wasn't brought down by controlled demolition. That's the obvious evidence to anybody with an even rudimentary idea of science and architectural engineering. They all three of those towers were brought down by military explosives, thermite, as Professor Stephen Jones of Brigham Young University sums it up. But Mr. Carl Barry Jennings, he died unexpectedly and suspiciously on August 19th, 2008. He had to go to a hospital for some reason. And the people there, he's one of two men that survived somehow the World Trade Center 7 that heard for hours before they could get to him and get him out of there safely, detonations and explosions occurring on World Trade Center 7 as well as the hundreds of witnesses that saw explosions all throughout that deadly morning before the two towers were...
Brian, let me just submit something for your consideration.
Right. I gotta calm down, I know.
No. I don't want you to calm down, man. I don't want you to calm down. I would be happy if there were about 10 million people in this country as worked up about this crap as you are. Okay?
I believe this is logical rage of a sane human being.
It is, right. Yours is not an irrational response.
No.
But let me just give you something to think about, if I could, okay. Please. Because there's no way to touch the 9/11 topic with on this or any other program without pissing off 50% of the audience. And more than anything else, I want to keep us together. I want to keep us focused. At least I want to keep myself focused. And I would Brian.
Okay.
Wait. We just talked about and you brought up the fact that you fear and you worry for President Obama and his family.
Right.
We have a census worker whose body was left hanging in a tree last week in Kentucky.
Evil, no good bastards.
We have the KKK. Leaving recruiting business cards on bulletin boards in post offices.
Right.
We have right-wing shooters who give all the credit and glory to Glenn Beck, Michael Savage, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, shooting up churches. We have doctors being murdered in their churches. I mean, it's gotten to where I can't even begin to just off the cuff list the right-wing mayhem. We have armed madmen going to public meetings where no one on the other side of the debate is armed. All right.
I know what you're saying. They would try to use the lies of September 11th as a pretext for their...
No. That's actually not what I'm going to say.
Okay.
What I'm going to say is, and I've said this before, if something else happens, whether it is perpetrated in the manner that we have been told it was, the official version that it was perpetrated, or whether it was some sort of an inside job, in either instance. Whatever they're going to do, they're never going to fly another plane into another building. Whatever the next attack is, whether it's real or false flag, is not going to be that.
Right.
And when we spend a great deal of time and energy and effort looking backwards at it,
right,
we make it more likely that whoever they are going to get away with whatever they're plotting next. Because what they're plotting next ain't what they did last time.
No, that's right. That's where it goes along. Yeah, that's the same thing from.
So what I would submit to you, Brian,
uh-huh,
is that our energies are best used and our efforts are best served by trying to look forward and seeing what these rotten rat bastards are gonna do next.
I agree
I've got stories in the stack for tonight that I hope to get to.
Okay.
That will point in that direction. There's an essay up at headonradionetwork.com. You'll have to look around to find it.
Okay.
But there's an essay up by our one of our listeners, Joe the Foxhole Atheist.
I think he's on Mike Malloy's too. He's emailed some.
Yeah. Well, he found us via Mike. Bless Mike's heart.
Yeah.
But he's asking the question, what does civil war look like in America? And it is worth the time it takes to read it, and it is worth the time it takes to contemplate what Joe has put forward there.
Okay. All right. I'll do that.
And I would suggest you have a read of that. But don't ever hesitate to call the program, Brian. And don't ever hesitate to be impassioned. Don't ever hesitate to be excited. Don't ever hesitate to be absolutely incensed with what you see and hear going on around you. Don't. Because the minute that we say, oh, well, they've done it again, then we're just more screwed than we were to begin with.
Right. And I agree with you, everything you just said there, Bob, about how to handle these people. But I also believe that, do you not believe that, I've ordered a book on the Secret Service, it's history, I forget the man who wrote it, it's on the way, but that the Secret Service right now should be interviewing Glenn Beck about his incendiary language. Shouldn't they not be detaining him maybe a number of times. They did that with poor, you know, was it Linda Tripp and that poor little Lewinsky girl? They detained her for hours. The FBI and Ken Starr's prosecutors intimidated that poor girl for hours.
Oh, what was Susan?
A blowjob in President Clinton, you know?
Yeah, what was her name? Susan McDougal? Didn't she go to prison for, you know, a year?
What they did to
because
that.
She refused to knuckle under to Ken Starr's thuggery?
And as Ken Starr, he releases all this pornography on the internet about what Bill Clinton's, what he's done, what every so many politicians in Washington have done. Nowadays, it's male and female alike have not had clean, you know, adultery-free marriages for centuries now in that city. And then yet they're going to go after Bill Clinton. This is the guy who stopped the 2000 millennial attacks, who knew that from August 1998 onwards, those two African embassies, which were basically legal American soil, where thousands of Africans were injured and hundreds died, but they were just Africans, third world people. So the Republican Congress did not want to join up with Bill Clinton against Bin Laden then, when he was launching attacks into Afghanistan. He was trying to kill Bin Laden, honestly. Bob Kerry even brought that up. He was on the commission there. And the fact is that we've been lied to about so many things. We had a pathological liar that just left the White House, this inbred blue blood named George W. Bush. We can't let him get away with it. But I know what you're saying about you can't dig up all of the past and solve it. That may have to be for the historians. But at the same time,
I'm sure at this point there are
official story, Bob. It reeks to high.
Oh no, no, no! The one thing I know is we have never been told the truth.
Right.
Or well, okay, no, no. Truth is a fluid thing. Okay.
Yes.
Truth is in the eye of the teller and the hearer. We've never had the facts. Okay.
Right.
I mean that's there's no getting around it. There's just too much creepy stuff going on there, but. But I hope you do see my point. Brian, it's wonderful talking to you, and I hope we will talk again soon, okay?
Okay, you take care, sir.
All right, later, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. No, I have no issues with people bringing passion, their passions to this program. I get bent out of shape. I get worked up. You know, I mentioned the young woman who died for want of health care in Ohio. We have noted another passing. A 23-year-old young man was put in the ground today here in West Virginia. Liked to hunt, liked to fish, beloved in his family, loved by his community. 23 years old, died of kidney cancer. And it's one of those things where you say, well, no, is there, you know, rock-solid legal proof? Probably not. But he lived in that community that was featured in the New York Times article of a couple of weekends back where there's hardly a gallbladder left, where children who brush their teeth with their local water every night, every morning, right after every meal, and floss, just like the dentist says, have their teeth dissolve out of their head because of the water. And this 23-year-old young man is experiencing his first day in the dirt today, having drunk that water for oh so many years. But I guess that's the price that we pay so that Massey Energy and other coal companies can fully actualize their worship of Holy Prophet, not P-R-O-P-H-E-T, but P-R-O-F-I-T, Holy Prophet. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Onward into the fog, indeed.
Hey, Fancy, how are you?
Honey, breathe.
Me?
And my other thought is, I'll take what he's having. Where does all that come from? I dialed in to be funny, and then suddenly, But I do have, you know what a guilty pleasure is?
Yes.
And I of course, I don't watch TV very much, but I've discovered that I can find all these crazy, all these wonderful kind of cable things and old shows, et cetera, on my faithful, old faithful computer. And so I got into something called Warehouse 13, which is a gas. They have some very funny writers. It's mystery. It's sci-fi. I think it's on the Sci-Fi Channel. And it's got some, and just visually it's a treat because they have all these gizmos. It's just the quichiest prop show I have ever seen. And I go nuts about certain things, but when you were talking earlier, one of the things they were dealing with in the last segment was, I mean, in the last show episode, was what do you do with really evil people? And the male lead says, you know, he says, like, really evil people, like Mussolini and Hitler and Michael Vick. And just dropped the line and kept on going.
Uh-huh.
And I'm doubled up. It's too funny.
Yeah, we do have those little perspective problem moments, don't we?
The really evil people.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, have I done something really nasty by suggesting that PETA throw boiling water on Glenn Beck? I'm just saying. I mean, that's PETA. They're like that.
We try to practice our better selves at all times, but... You know, there are days when...
Then again, maybe if we just threw cold water on him, he'd melt like the Wicked Witch of the West.
There's a story circulating. Apparently, Beck was a morning zoo disc jockey at one point.
Yes.
Early in his career. And that his
Yeah, he came up in the Seattle market, I do believe.
Yeah, and one of his rivals... the rival of one of his... the wife of one of his rivals... had a miscarriage, and he called her on the air, and he said, you had a miscarriage in a few days. She said, yes, I did. And then he went on to joke about that the guy couldn't do anything right, like father a baby.
Dear Jesus.
And I've never been a shock jock fan to start with.
No, and see, I remember some of them. I remember, was it Stern or the Grease Man? After the Air Florida crash, who called Air Florida and asked him how much was a plane ticket to the 20th Street Bridge?
We had Imus here in Tucson.
The Grease Man. He was a big one in D.C. for a while. He finally lost his gig after the Emmys one year, or no, the Grammys one year. I think it was the year that the miseducation of Lauryn Hill, the miseducation of Lauryn Hill, I think, won, and he played some music the next morning and remarked after the music, no wonder they dragged them behind trucks. And that was, you know, that was funny. And it's not. You know, it's just not. And I realize we're verging off into something serious. But, again, you can go and find clip after clip after clip, whether it's Beck or Hannity or Savage. You know, what these autistic kids need is a good slap across the mouth.
Cut that crap out.
Yeah, cut that. Quit being autistic like that. And bless her heart, ELO in the chat room made a gorgeous video out of it that's still on YouTube somewhere.
ELO, would you send me the URL on that one?
Okay.
He's so good.
Yeah,
he's just so good.
If you just maybe search Michael Savage autism horn parody, something like that, it'll come up. It's funny. It's funny. Because of what she did, not because of what I said. But anyway, all of these people.
Yeah, I think
they do. They do this.
I think,
and they, you know,
we say, where do these people come from? And but Beck came up admiring the shock jocks and the morning zoo. You know, a slide whistle.
Hey, 13 minutes after 7 o'clock, crew. Time to check in with Chopper Dave on the.
Yeah.
And after that, we'll look at a woman's naked breasts and tell you about it on the radio. Wow.
But, you know, I don't, does he have a degree in journalism or you know, any sense?
No, he said, no, I think, no, he said, no, he went,
then.
He went to the, at some point, I think he had a cup of coffee in either the Harvard or Yale Community Extension Service Adult Education Program. No, I kid you not.
Oh, my dear. Oh, my dear. Yeah, you know, I'm going to go back to, like, okay, 7 or 8 years ago.
But it's worth millions of dollars a year, Fancy.
And 7 or 8 years ago, there was a hearing in Washington, and the Air America crew went, and a lot of other people, and in those days, Randy Rhodes was on Air America, and she made a wonderful suggestion. And it was, if one uses the word news, it literally has to be verifiable in some way, the truth. And to separate, legally separate news and commentary. So that you would say, hey, this is such and such a show, we have commentary. This is such and such a show, we have news. And to make it a legal point that one does not counterfeit the news, and that there are consequences if you do. You know, now, obviously, you know, there would have to be some kind of marginal error for mistake too. But to separate commentary and news and make it very clear, she used the word branding, which I thought, you know, I remember listening to it and going, now that's a good idea. What do you think? Pretty much you can say anything you want to say right now on the, you know.
Well, if you were listening a little earlier when I was talking with Garrett and playing that clip between Beck and Cutesy Couric.
Yeah, I sent you a copy of that. Along with probably 100 other people. But.
You'll notice, you know, well, some people say, and that whole some people say thing is entirely a creature of the Fox style manual. Because real journalism says that if you are going to print or publish an allegation, unless it's a case of a whistleblower whose identity has to be protected or they'll come and kill him or her, that the real journalism is predicated on facing one's accusers, just like the courtroom process is. That you have a right to confront your accuser.
I thought that Katie using some people say was a wink. I was watching the video of it as I was
Playing.
Exactly what she's doing.
I thought she was playing it straight. I didn't get the irony in it.
But then maybe I was just reading more than what was there.
Because I hear it all over the place now. Some people say, you know, turn on your local news. Some people say. And it's not used with a nod and a wink. It's used as, you know, it's apparently acceptable what passes for journalism around here now. And it's disturbing in the extreme.
Yeah, I would like to see when they talk about fairness doctrine, of course, we don't want that reintroduced because way too many problems involved with what was there. But I do like the idea of labeling the difference between fact and commentary.
Oh, look, I mean, it used to drive me crazy because when I was on terrestrial radio, I had to run a disclaimer at the front end of my show. The right wing nut job didn't. But a disclaimer had to run at the beginning of my show saying that the opinions expressed by Bob Kincaid are not those of Southern Communications, their advertisers, or their employees, staff, or management. Now, the right wing nut job? No. I guess he was just speaking for the whole organization. And since it's a right-wing organization, well, you know, would you be surprised?
I speak for you when I say, oh, my, oh, my. Well, I got very, what's it called when you do an audible intake of breath? That Is that a, it, I mean, it's a gasp.
That's a gasp.
But is that an aspiration? When you, because I found when Brian was on, is it Brian?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was doing it too. I was doing gasps with him. He's amazing. And but then I'm Southern. We're all slowed down here. I just slowed down.
Oh, God, we're getting a suggestion in the chat room from Kid A that we change this to. Some might say with Bob Kincaid.
Ooh, hi, Kid A. Some might say. Yeah, I just took that as a wink on her part. I thought she was being, you know, let's hand you a little bit of your own routine here. But then I often give people more credit than I read in things that aren't there anyway. What's a note from Soupy Sales here? Okay. All right, guys, thanks so much. I'm going to give you, pass it on to somebody else.
All right, Fancy, so good to hear from you, dear, and glad to be back and glad to hear from everybody.
Yeah, you folks have a good evening now.
All right, you take care. Bye now. From out on the desert, our pal Fancy. And rolling onward, hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke.
See, they revived you.
About half.
Well, my question is, and we'll get into this later, but...
I'll be mainlining cheap cough syrup as soon as the program's over, but, yeah, go ahead.
Well, my question is it unusual for a man to have the flu for 12 to 15 days?
No, apparently not with this one.
Oh, okay.
Because you don't sound any better either.
Oh, no, I'm fine. I was just thinking about our friend Mr. Tebow.
Oh, Jesus H. Tebow?
Jesus H. Tebow. I think he's had the flu now for about 3 or 4 weeks.
But this thing really does hang on, but you can't call it that anymore. You have to call it an upper respiratory infection.
Oh, isn't that nice? Now, the thing with, what was a minute ago you were telling? I'm sorry, lost where I was. Do you think we can get the mainstream media, if we push them, if we give them a pledge that they will not have John McCain on during the month of October anywhere?
Maybe if we paid them money.
You know, it's one of those things where they were sitting there talking about it the last week, that, you know, they were talking, everybody was complaining about Obama, President Obama being on all five shows. It's like, he ain't even trying hard. He ain't going to catch up to McCain for 20 years.
No, if he was on the Home Shopping Network, he wouldn't catch up with John McCain.
You know, it's just, I wish somebody would run down all the, like I say, just the last 10 years and just show how many, who all from the Senate and the House and just anybody in general politics, how many times they've been on the different shows. Because I tell you what, John's got to be leading the pack.
Over the last 8 years, I'd say absolutely. You know, because, well, he was a good guest because he was a maverick.
Yeah. Never would say anything overly bad, but no, he is a maverick.
Right.
Well, I see the thing that they keep telling us all the time that President Obama's just dropping in the polls, but they had this poll with him against the four quote-unquote frontrunners for the Republicans, and only two of them he was below 50%, and then he was just like 48%. Where, you know, the thing where they had him up against Palin and Jebby and Romney and Huckabee, and Huckabee's the only one that came closest, and he still was 5 or 6 points ahead of him. Palin, he was like 15 points ahead of Palin. And Jebby had the lowest numbers of the whole group. So like I say, all you have to do is say the word Bush, and people all of a sudden now just start shaking.
You know, how long is it going to take for that to wear off, though, Luke? I still say 2012 it's going to be Bush Palin, Bush Jindal. No, see, it won't be Palin. It'll be Bush Jindal.
No, I don't think it's going to be him. I think at the rate right now, it's going to be Huckabee. Well, that's fine, because like I say, he'll appeal to the South, and that's about it. You know, a few pockets here and there.
He'll get every Fox voter.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's one of those things that they'll the DNC will go for every one of his shows. Like I say, right now they better be taping every one of his shows on Fox.
Media Matters is.
Yeah, I know. But that's what I mean.
Yeah, you just pick up the phone. Guys, could we have could you just email over the files, please?
But, oh, Lordy. The one that got to me last week, I was going to call you on this one before all this started, was, I think it was like Thursday morning, Howard Kurtz had one of his articles said that he was asking if the Dems had wimped out in the Beck era. And I'm sitting there going, Howie, I wouldn't use the word wimped out when you're already calling it the Beck era.
And that, you know, that's something that really, really does sincerely bother me that I spend any time talking about this creep at all. But how do you not, Luke? How do you not?
Well, the one thing, I notice we are, but you're not getting anybody else talking about it, that apparently guess who decided to start reading Mr. Beck's pedigree? Some fellow named Scarborough. Apparently Joe is not a Beck fan.
Well, you know who else is not a Beck fan?
The Rushmaster.
And Mark Levin.
Ooh, like I said, when his numbers got high enough, all the others are coming out with the long knives.
Won't even refer to him by name. Mark Levin, who has a voice made for print, by the way. Mark Levin refers to him as the 5 PM-er.
Oh, God.
And, really, the long knives are out. You're not kidding. I mean, just being...
Like I said, you know, that's when you knew it was good was when you saw the pig man started to come out. That sort of was the flag. Everybody, it's pre, you can hit him now. You know, up to now, you couldn't say anything about it. Now you can hit on him. You know, excuse me, hit at him, which I guess would be the right term. And I see the other one that's going right now, if you go over to Media Matters, they're really loving this, is... Our question is Lou off his meds or does he need to have his medications increased? If you go to Media Matters and read some of the things that Lou's doing on his radio show.
Well, see, that's the thing. The radio show is where you take the real crazy you can't put on TV.
And it's like they need to start, need to start putting this up and going, you know, people, this is what he's saying when you all aren't listening. You know, congenial TV crowd. You who think Lou's just a nice old guy, here's what Lou's saying on the radio to the real crazies. But, you know, we were talking
and that's and that's exactly what's happening. Getting back to Levin for a minute, though, just because I think you'll find the irony in this a little bit delightful, Luke. Do you know what it was that brought Levin out of the underbrush to go after Beck?
The Yom Kippur thing?
No, that was bad enough though.
Religious day.
Yeah, prostituting a high holy day for one's right wing purposes is well, but then again, war on Christmas. What do you want? it was when Beck came out and said that the country would have been worse off under John McCain.
Oh.
And I mean, Levin came out absolutely squealing like a stuck pig.
I'm surprised we hadn't heard more out of that statement. Or most of them, I guess, just decided to pretend that he really didn't give that interview.
He's been trying to keep it alive.
Oh, God. I meant to call last night, and I know they're having radio trouble, or phone trouble, excuse me. Our new name for him, John Fox, Warlord of Mars.
Only from a guy who goes to Dragon Con.
Well, you know where that comes from. But, you know, I just
yeah, John Carter.
That. Yeah, and I was just sitting there, I'm looking at some of those pictures, and it's just sort of like, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with the climate. No! We've just gone through, like the last 2 weeks of rain. We had, Cookeville had 10 inches in a day. Nashville had like 7 or 8 inches. We had like 5. Oh, no, there's nothing wrong with the weather. No.
You know, and one of the things that drives me nuts is all this denial business. And they're denying, because one of the central articles of faith for a right-wing climate change denier is that it is impossible for human beings to affect the climate. Dust Bowl? Anybody? I mean, we're not even talking about 100 years ago.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, it's like, that's one of the reasons that the Wild West didn't get settled all that quickly, because farmers came out there thinking, we'll plant farms here. And the cattlemen were looking, look, we get scrubgrass, and we're happy to get that.
Yeah, it ain't doing a lot of rain in here.
So you might get 1 year, you know, if you get a good year, but the next year, bye-bye.
And the amazing thing out of that is, and again, I reference a book that I think everyone should own who's interested in the prehistory, so to speak, of this side of the planet, and that's Charles C. Mann's 1491, in which he goes into great detail talking about the way that the peoples who lived here before white folks arrived manipulated their environment, and they made some rather profound mistakes. Yep. There's a huge city complex across from St. Louis called Cahokia that the people who lived there screwed themselves right out of by poorly manipulating their environment.
Well, you know, it's like when you go, it's like if you ever go down to where the Mesas are and the Mesa house, and you're sitting there going, why aren't they still living here? These places look like they were livable.
Well, they deforested themselves, among other things. Right.
It's sort of like, well, that's nice, you know, during the sunlight, but at night this place gets kind of cold, and there ain't nothing around here to burn brush, and it burns quick.
Yeah, you're five minutes warm, and 7 hours and 55 minutes freezing.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing you don't
know. But no, human beings
never tell you about.
No, look at the lowest plateau in China, blew away. You know, mm-hmm. Some of that dust that John was talking about coming out of Asia. Hello. It's a function of human manipulation of the environment.
Well, up there where they're having to use more and more property to grow food, you know, where they're having to deforest, you know, just to grow food to feed all their people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, it's hard to imagine. But, no, our question is, how did Virginia Tech jump six spaces, in fact, jump over Ohio State?
Because I don't know. I mean, I saw that. Whoa. Well, you know, they played Alabama decent.
Oh, yeah.
We
were just sitting around up here. The fun one was LSU moved up after Mississippi State came within a hair's breadth of beating them. And somebody said, well, the only reason it was because everybody else in front of them lost pretty much.
But, you know, what was Ole Miss doing at number four, please?
Well, that's one of them things, you know, we've always talked about, that they should never put out a poll until about the fourth week of the season. You know, there shouldn't be a poll until that time. Because, like I say, that's when you're most facing your non-conference, and you'll find out what you got. Because up till then, it's just, you know, we just threw it at the dartboard. Yeah, they're fourth, yeah. Well, because all was based on of them having Javon Sneed back, who is a good quarterback, you know, when he plays well, but he didn't play well the last couple of weeks.
And, you know, I guess the leapfrog, the Virginia Tech leapfrog was based on the fact that Miami was thought to be so all-fired good. But then again, you look at Saturday, and Miami had to struggle to beat, Miami got beat by Virginia Tech, and lo and behold, South Florida comes up and hands Florida State there. Yeah, is this yours? Right.
And they were using a freshman quarterback.
Yeah, because that guy who's been playing for Jim Leavitt for about the last 16 years. I mean, I think Matt Grothy's played at South Florida longer than Ron Paul has played at Notre Dame.
Well, like I said, I think he's got tenure down there as a teacher now. But the one that got to me is, and like I say, we've said this before, we're just waiting for one person that's just going to hit Brother Tebow one time too many, and he ain't going to get back up again.
Well, you know what? Urban Meyer has a lot of explaining to do as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we're 31 to 7,
and your Heisman quarterback is still in the game.
In the middle of the third quarter.
In the middle of the third quarter for style points?
Well, you know what that is, don't you? They can hear Alabama coming down the street, and they know if they don't win and win big, that Alabama will overtake them. Because every time you read something about Alabama, it's better and better for them. And I think Urban realizes if he don't beat everybody by 50 points now.
And Bama did look like a machine on Saturday.
Oh, they did. But you know, I mean, that's what he thinks. That's why he's doing it, because he wants that. Was it 58 of 59 first-place votes went to them and one went to Texas? And I'm sitting there going, nobody went for Alabama? That just blew my mind that they weren't getting any first-place votes.
But I tell you, the most sickening event out of the whole Saturday. Granted, there's no guarantee it would have been a game changer, but that rotten ass call in Ann Arbor. Did you see that thing? I mean,
yeah.
You know, whatever happened to tie goes to the runner, possession goes to the offense. Because there was an officiating crew looking around at 105,000 screaming Michigan idiots.
Going, I want to live.
Yeah, because the replay, it was dead with the replay, and he was going, listen, if I go back and I overturn this thing, we're not getting out of here.
So we're going to have to live here for 3 or 4 days till the crowd disappears.
Well, I'd say that there's no conclusive proof that, yeah, okay, that's what we'll hang our hats on. Oh, it was frustrating.
I thought they're going, is this the same group that we see in those commercials for the place where he looks in and talks to the people?
Yeah, where art imitates life.
Yeah, I really.
Hey, guys, what do you think? Oh, we want to get out of here, ref. Yeah, I do, too.
You know, that, like you say, that's just art imitating life. Oh, but another one this past weekend, going back to politics for a minute, is watching all the right wingers having to rearm for Big Dog, because Big Dog had his initiative come.
Global Climate Initiative or
yeah.
Global Initiative, yeah.
So it's just interesting to see them all of them having to dig out all their old.
Well, I love the irony. I don't know if you realize this or not, Luke, but now that Democrats are supposedly back in power, what we're doing with it, I'm not certain.
They don't realize it though.
Yeah, but it used to be, you might remember Guy James would go, and I got to go to, one this year, but this year it was America's Future Now. But back during the dark, depressing, and horrific days of the Bush administration, it was called the Take Back America Conference.
Yeah, the Dark Ages, I remember those.
And now that the Democrats are back, supposedly in power, the right wing has decided to hold what they call a Take Back America Conference.
Oh.
Only now, just so they can't be accused of a total ripoff, it's the How to Take Back America Conference. And I got some audio to play after our call that's just going to make your hair stand on end, Luke.
Oh, one other thing before I forget.
Yeah.
Whenever they find out who this jackass was on Facebook, I want his name. I want to see it. I want somebody to run up his bio. I want to see who this guy is. I don't want him to be some unnamed person that we can't identify.
Oh, you mean the one that put up the
poll?
Yeah. And that's the other thing. Here are the answers to the poll question, by the way.
Uh-oh.
It was accompanied, by the way, by a Photoshop job of Barack Obama as Borat with the same font style. It says Barack 08. Says, vote in the Obama poll. Should Obama be killed? Your choices are yes. Choice number two is maybe. Choice number three is if he cuts my health care. And choice number four is no.
As I say, I want this exposed. You know, remember now when Move On had their little thing and had two, three people send in their Bush videos that depicted him as Hitler.
Yeah.
And they took him off. It wasn't Move On that did it. It was people submitted them. Remember, Move On had to go around and just apologize.
Bow and scrape and apologize and abase themselves. Yes.
I want Rupert Murdoch, who owns Facebook, I want him out there apologizing every other hour.
He
owns it.
Well, let's see. Barry Schnitt. Mm-hmm. Can't make these names up, Luke. Barry Schnitt is Facebook's spokesman for policy. And he told Think Progress that the company is following up with the developer of the user thingy that allowed the poll to be generated to make sure that the application has better procedures in place going forward to monitor their user-generated content.
Well, like I say, I want Rupert out there talking on camera because I want somebody to stick the camera in Rupert's face and go, and of course you don't support Glenn Beck and his bigotry, do you? And I want him to start hemming and hawing and everything else. You saw the thing with Miss Bachman this weekend.
Yes.
Where she got asked the question about the poll worker, and amazingly enough, the subject changed. Or else she went deaf or something, one or the other. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, and what? I can't, huh?
Can't hear you. The crowd's too loud.
Yeah, thank you so much. And got in her limo and drove away.
Well, but I'm going to let you go because I know you got other people to talk to. You have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Luke. Bye now.
Goodbye.
From East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke. Yeah, just let's do this. I have referred from time to time to something that made me laugh uproariously. I just thought it was delightfully funny. It was a story that my mother read me out of a history book when I was a tiny little fellow. And it was it concerned a plot that was hatched by, I think, people in, radicals in South Carolina during the Civil War, in which they were going, it was suggested that they dig a great big ditch around Massachusetts. No, it was before the Civil War, because Massachusetts was such a hotbed of advocacy for freedom, for ending slavery. And some wit in South Carolina published an editorial or some such in which they suggested that a ditch be dug around Massachusetts and Massachusetts be floated out to sea. And like I said, 4 or 5 years old, you know how it is with the sense of humor of a 4 or 5 year old. There's no accounting for what is funny. And lo and behold, it's come back to haunt me. And lo and behold, it's a Southerner again. Only we can't hang this one on South Carolina. No, this one goes home to Arkansas. Phyllis Schlafly hosted this fraudulent conference called the How to Take Back America Conference. And the keynote was delivered by none other than radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstaby. Remember, the story starts with me telling you about radical Southerners wanting to dig a ditch around Massachusetts and float it out to sea. Well, there is no bigger bete noir for the weirdest of the weirdo right wing than, of course, the United Nations. Again, I remember from my childhood riding around seeing bumper stickers on vehicles in Alabama said, "Get us out of the UN!" And you know what? I saw one just a couple of weeks ago here in West Virginia, too. Nothing changes. So, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstaby spent the lion's share of his keynote to the How to Take Back America conference, beaten up on the United Nations, which he referred to as the international equivalent of ACORN. He was given a standing ovation for his remarks, of course, of which you are about to hear a portion.
This nonsense. Here we were giving attention and giving platform to these despicable despots. We were giving them a place in the sun as if they were the equivalent of the leaders of some civil country, when they are nothing but murdering thugs whose terroristic activities threaten the freedom of every living, breathing, loving person. Enough. It's time to get a jackhammer and to simply chip that part of New York City, let it float into the East River.
Oh my God. Hey, if it played with the crowd in 1858 South Carolina, it'll be hot at the How to Take Back America conference. Hoo-wee. Now, the question is, does Mike Huckstaby also know that story, and is he ripping off some radical pro-slavery the wit in South Carolina in 1858 or whatever? Or did he come up with that, float the UN out to sea, business by himself. It's time to get a jackhammer and to simply chip that part of New York City. Let it float into the East River, never to be seen again. Mike Huckstraby, you damn dumbass. As long as people are talking, it reduces the likelihood that they are shooting. That was the idea behind the League of Nations, which, interestingly, isolationist right-wing Republicans were willing to see Woodrow Wilson die. You know, he had a stroke while he was out trying to hustle the League of Nations charter and treaty, and was opposed by right-wing Republicans in his effort, and it more or less killed him. Oh, look, another Democratic president killed by Republicans. Who'd have thunk? But it may well be argued that the failure of the United States to ratify and enter into the League of Nations played a humongous role in allowing the Second World War to happen. Now, I don't want to just, you know, certainly not post hoc ergo propter hoc, but is it just me, or there haven't been any world wars since the United Nations was formed, have there? And we've got noble efforts to deliver food to hungry people. We've got worldwide efforts to understand the spread of disease that could not have otherwise been coordinated. But that's no good, because radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstraby, remember, whose son hung a dog in the woods and beat it to death as it hanged. Why isn't Mike Huckstraby's son doing the same kind of time that Michael Vick did? Just asking. You know, that was while Huckstraby was governor of Arkansas, no less. Well, I guess we've got our answer there, don't we? Now, let's hear a little bit more of Mike. Or clapping right-wing idiots, as the case may be.
We pay 22% of their operating budget, 27% of their peacekeeping mission budget. It's a little over $5 billion a year. And I know that in the great scheme of Obama spending, that is chump change. I get that. But frankly, one dime more to an organization that props up complete fools like Ahmadinejad, who denies the Holocaust and who threatens peace and security to every person on this planet, it's time to say enough of the American taxpayer dollar being spent for something that may have had a noble idea, but it has become a disgrace. It has become the international equivalent of ACORN, and it's time to say enough.
Oh, yeah, say ACORN again, Mike. Say it again. They love it when you say ACORN. It makes them feel all sexy-like. So, just to recap, we don't want an international forum where crazy people can say crazy things to keep them from going out and starting crazy wars. We'd like for them to just start the crazy wars so we can bring more American men and women home in flag-draped boxes. Is that it, Mike, you freak? But that wasn't all. No, there was something much more frightening coming out of this wingnut conference in St. Louis this past weekend. There was something positively sickening. And that is a woman who grew up as a Christian in Austria. Hello? Whose name is Vertman. Kitty Vertman. And she hosted a panel called a workshop, rather. It was a workshop. Yeah, it's a workshop, yeah. How to recognize living under Nazis and communists. Really? Nazis and communists? I was told they didn't get along so well. But, you know, that's just history, and history's no fun when you can just make it up on the fly. Janet Porter, another right-wing freak, wrote a column prior to Kitty Wirthman's workshop, saying that her description of Austria in the 1930s is a mirror to America today. They had Joseph Goebbels, we have Mark Lloyd, the diversity czar. And the wing nuts were bulging the walls to hear this woman speak. She, by the way, is Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum South Dakota president. She spent her time behind the microphone describing similarities between President Barack Obama and, come on, you know, Adolf Hitler. And there was literally a call to arms. I will let this woman speak for herself. Kitty Wirthman. Wirthman. How to recognize Nazism.
We elected Hitler by 98% of the vote by the means of the ballot box. How could that happen, that such a monster would get elected?
Now, wait. I think she used the first-person plural pronoun. Let's double-check. This matters.
We elected Hitler by 98.
We elected Hitler. She was born in Austria. Austria had not been annexed yet. That was a little bit of that whole after he took power Hitler stuff. But now she's, granted, she was a baby. I didn't know they gave babies the vote. But anyway.
8% of the vote by the means of the ballot box. How could that happen, that such a monster would get elected in a 100% Christian nation? Fact is, Hitler talked like an American politician.
Really? Hitler talked like an American politician? The last time I heard an American politician talking like Hitler, it was Lyndon LaRouche. Or, wait a minute, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstraby. Or a member of the Reconstructionist movement of the Christian politics. Just saying.
Now, if we would have dictatorship overnight, and had we had our guns, we would have fought a bloody battle to the last person. So keep your guns and buy more guns. Yay. And buy any more guns.
If we had had our guns, we would have fought a bloody battle. So keep your guns and buy more guns and buy ammunition. I don't know how many times I have to say this. Maybe I don't. They want, they ache for blood to run freely in the streets in this country. That is not hyperbole on my part. That is what they want. And did you hear how the audience loved it when she said,
keep your guns and buy more guns and buy ammunition, take back America.
Don't let them take the country into socialism. And I refer again, Hitler's party was National Socialism.
You ignorant twit! Hitler could have called his party National Merry-Go-Round Playtime. It would have still been fascism. It was not socialism. It was fascism. But this is a theme and a meme that has gotten a hell of a lot of legs on the right wing. That Nazism equals socialism and socialism equals Nazism. In other words, what this woman is saying is that every country with any socialism or socialist points of view in the world is de facto Nazi. Go ask a Swede. Go ask a Finn. Go ask a Norwegian. Go ask a Dane. Go ask a Dutchman how they feel. No, don't ask them how they feel. Just tell them that they live under a Nazi government and see how long your nose stays unbloodied. They don't. They have theirs in cemeteries, too, just like we have ours. Go tell a Russian. Go tell a Russian that there's no difference between socialism and fascist Nazism. Maybe, just maybe, they'll take you and show you that giant statue that stands to mark the siege of Leningrad, where millions of Soviet citizens sacrificed themselves to throw back the Nazi menace that was not socialism, but was in fact fascism. But they, these right-wing punks and thugs and freaks, can't tell their little minions that, because maybe they'd start looking up and wondering what is fascism, and then they would see. Then, oh Lord, then they would see that fascism, as defined by Benito Mussolini, Il Duce, is the marriage of the power of the state and the power of the corporate structure. And then maybe these benighted little wingnuts would look around and say, wait a minute! This healthcare debate, it's the marriage of corporate healthcare, insurance, and government. What are we supposed to call that? Oh, wait. Do you see what I'm saying? This woman is defining Barack Obama and calling for people to buy more guns and buy ammunition and fight, in her words, a bloody battle to stave off socialism. What she's doing is cheating. She is replacing one definition with another. Because this much is true. The fascists always fight back against socialism. They are at diametric ends of the spectrum from one another. She does want a bloody battle because fascists are bloody people, dirty people, filthy people, murderous people, hate-filled people. And fascism is predicated on marrying the power of the state to the power of corporations to the detriment of society as a whole and the betterment of corporations as a whole. It is literally the sacrifice of national well-being on the altar of corporate profit. Don't take my word for it. Go do the research if you don't know already. National Socialism was not socialism. It was called National Socialism because they needed to call it something besides fascism, because Benito Mussolini, by the time it was rising in Germany, had already given fascism a pretty dirty name. It was image management, of which the German the fascists were past masters.
National means the word Nazi derived from national. And that's what we are having here right now, which is bordering on Marxism.
Yes.
Wait, National Socialism is now Marxism? Jesus criminy! They've taken every political science text and just thrown it out the window, dropped a little acid, and made it up for themselves. Hitler is now a Marxist? Jiminy! Somebody dig up Omar Bradley and tell him that. Somebody dig up George S. Patton and tell him that. Somebody dig up General Marshall and tell him that. Or FDR. Because that's what we're facing here. We are facing the redefinition of history for political gain and political ends by people who would use that redefinition to further fascist goals in this country. I don't know why this is so why do we tolerate this? Obviously you don't and I don't. But Lord God, this woman is calling for armed rebellion in the streets of America. I don't have a link handy, but I implore you to go to headonradionetwork.com and read Joe the Foxhole Atheist's recent essay, What Civil War Looks Like in America. Because it is trenchant. It is spot on, and it deserves attention. What's what we're having right now, which is bordering on Marxism. They are trying to whip up the old red-baiting bugaboo in the hopes of getting the blood really flowing. Because if they can, they can finally institute their fascist wonderland, and guess what? It will have camps. And it will have death. Oh, and by the way, of course, nothing ever happens in Wingnut World that they don't try to make a buck off of it. Kitty Werthmann was hustling a DVD about National Socialism that had these self-same dirty-ass lies in them. And the folks at Think Progress, of course, bought one. I'm sure it's making a lovely coaster for someone at this point. But before they did that, they went over to Congresswoman Bachman and said, would you autograph this, please? Which Congresswoman Bachman immediately did, endorsing this ignorance
You know, I don't, ignorance can be cured. But as Sue so often notes, you can't fix stupid. But this isn't even stupid. This is deliberate. This is deliberate misinformation, of which the fascists are, as I note, past masters.
The first thing we got was equal rights amendment. Equal rights for women. All for frosting on the cake. Equal rights for women, because our women, if you were a female teacher, after you got married, you could not teach in the school system anymore. Because by tradition, the women stayed home and raised the family. But also the Equal Rights Amendment was used for two things. To equalize the country's wealth. Economically, take from those who have by raising our taxes, huge, up to 70%. And then we had a guaranteed income that everybody was entitled to a guaranteed income. And if your income did not match up what the government decreed, you got subsidized housing, you got food stamps, you got fuel, until the income of everybody was equalized.
This woman's a moron. Workers' compensation arose about probably 60 years before the rise of Nazism in Germany. And so did a whole lot of that social safety net structure. But you see, everything that they hate, they are trying to tar with communism and Nazism. And communist Nazis, you know, that's, I don't know, that's like, Eskimo Arabs. It don't work. It's not real. Short-necked giraffes, okay? Purple polka-dotted unicorns. It's just fantasy stuff. And, you know, just a question for Ms. Werthmann. There's still a social safety net in Europe. Is she alleging, again... Is she go to Germany, kitty? Frau Werthmann, go to Germany. Tell a German citizen who is, say, out of work and has a subsidized income to keep them from living in dire and destitute poverty. Tell them that that's Nazi, Ms. Werthmann. And see where that gets you. And, you know, this sort of harkens back to that anonymous comment that was made to President Obama. You're trying to get health care for everybody, and they're putting Hitler mustaches on you. I don't understand this. Most of the civilized world does not understand this. But you and I do. We do. Because we understand that underpinning the Republican Party, that weird little rump of the old Confederacy now, we understand that their goal is to take over America and to impose something approaching a fascist dictatorship. Never forget, never forget, never forget. Upton Sinclair, was it? I'm always screwing this up. When fascism comes to America, it will come wrapped in a flag and carrying a Bible. Mike Huckstraby does both. And Kitty Werthmann facilitates it. And Michelle Bachmann endorses it. This woman has also been asked by a group of bankers to address them this month. Her idea, her lie. Again, the big lie. Tell a lie, tell it often enough, and it becomes the truth. Her big lie is gaining traction and certainly gaining in popularity. That should give you the sweats at night. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob. Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Yeah, you know why the right wing is so anti-UN? In its core, why it's so anti-UN? It's the same reason why they were anti-League of Nations, because one of the mandates of League of Nations was self-determination for all people, including people of color.
Yes.
It all boils down to race, still. Because the UN is one of the few global institutions that people of color can be in top.
Well, the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights is an embodiment and an extension of most of what's in our Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
But right wing, but see, you know, by virtue of what Huxterby says, Kevin, about how, you know, we've glorified him by giving him a stage to blah, you know, say, you know, yada, 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 yada. What he's saying is that free speech does not apply to non-whites.
That, and, you know, this is Calvinism, extremist Calvinism.
You know, I know it might sound a little crazy, Kevin, but you know what? You're free to be, the people are free to be nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, turn on any right-wing radio show, and you're going to hear more insanity than you can tolerate in an hour in 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And people are free to be that crazy. People are free to suggest that we need to dig a ditch around the UN and float it out to sea. Never mind the engineering involved. People are free to be crazy. But not if they're not as white as Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, and this is why I say, you know, last week when Muammar Gaddafi, as much as they made fun of him and ridiculed him and all that, he had some profound stuff saying, like, you know, in my country, health care is free. It's illegal to profit off of health care. You know, it makes no sense to me.
And, of course, just in time, we have the magical Ayman al-Zawahiri tape out now. I don't, did you catch that? We've got a new Al-Qaeda tape that criticizes Barack Obama for not doing enough for the Palestinians.
No.
Criticizes Germany for its ongoing efforts in like Afghanistan or whatever. Yeah. But I'm sure the right wing will see they're saying that because they want people to rally around Barack Obama because they like Barack Obama. Al-Qaeda does.
This is the
kind of thinking that you and I would usually have. You and I would probably have to consume at least a half a fifth of Johnny Walker to get to.
Oh yeah.
And you know, even then we don't go there.
Hey, I have. I'll be there. I'm not ashamed. You know, but I'll tell you that right now. You know, it's all about, and it all boils down to what's pissing them off is that a person of color has power over their lives to the point where it's going to be affected. It's not an empty seat anymore. In short, you know, he's not VP of community relations like they used to do for the tokens. He actually does make financial decisions as a corporation.
But
to kill a mockingbird. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And just the fact that, why are they so, Kevin, why are they so afraid of crazy talk?
Why are they so afraid of crazy talk or sane talk as far as, universal health care, Social Security.
Well, right, but I mean, what, you know, the stuff with, like, you know, Ahmadinejad and Gaddafi. Most of the world knows they're nuts. They certainly know that they don't. Ahmadinejad doesn't exercise real power.
Yeah, but the thing is, I say. Again, these are people, yeah, they are despots and stuff, but Ahmadinejad You know, he is basically defending his own country, because don't forget, Iran, or Persia, I like to say, has been the enemy of every Western civilization since Alexander the Great for some reason. The West doesn't like Persians.
Actually, it's even pre-Alexander.
Yeah. You know, if you want to, you know, go to the... But I'm talking major powers.
No, well, no, so am I. I'm talking Marathon and Thermopylae, and, you know, that's pre-Alexander.
Okay. Since the Greeks, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah, back, you know, Xerxes, Cyrus the Great, yeah, that bunch. Yeah. Although, oddly enough, at that point in time, the Persians were the civilized ones. They were the world power.
So, you know, for some reason, you know, the West have always had this beef with Persia. So you're talking about 3,000 years of history here.
Yeah. Yeah, the roughly... 350 B.C. to the present.
Yeah. You know, and again, it is what it is, you know. And again, that movie, the 300, you know, that cartoon movie? You know, remember the one that made, you know, the 300?
This is Sparta!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that featured Xerxes as an 8-foot post-punk drag queen.
Yeah, you know.
You know, still slurring them 2,300 years later.
Yeah, it's like, to me, I don't understand, you know, this whole morality. You know, it's like, again, the whole morality thing is like, if you're a person of color, you're less moral than a person who, you know, who isn't.
Well, let's put it in context. Back when the Greeks were the way that whole thing broke down with the Greeks is that they were infringing on Persian territory, and they meant to.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, you had the Greeks who bathed by rubbing themselves with olive oil and scraping it off and selling the scrapings to women as aphrodisiacs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had on the other side the Persians who bathed. You had civilization among the Persians. You had an active economy. You had the greatest cities on the planet. And then on the other side, you had the Greeks, who were actually, in that whole scenario, the terrorists.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a cautionary tale in that for us in the modern world, because the Persian Empire used the same kind of thinking that we're using now, that is, swatting flies with sledgehammers, and destroyed their own empire out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we run the risk of doing the same. The same thing happened a little bit later in the Peloponnesian War between Sparta and Athens. Athens was a mercantile empire. It was civilized within definitions. You know, the males in that society were free, and the democracy was, you know, it was a free society for about maybe a quarter of the people who lived in it, not counting slaves, not counting women, not counting children, and not counting outsiders. But they decided that they wanted to put paid to Sparta once and for all, because it was a brutal dictatorship that killed its own people. Ever heard that before?
Oh, yeah.
And as a consequence... They started a war that wound up eating them alive. And they wound up being the ones who surrendered, and they lost their democracy.
Yeah. Well, that's what's happening here now. You know, red state, blue status.
Yeah. So, there's...
And guess who's winning? The Spartan League, because they're going to fight... Oh, yeah.
To the bitter end. But
you know, it's sad enough to say, hopefully, even if it comes down to that, I won't be in this country, but...
Well, the sad thing is, a lot of us are going to be, and these people are pretty close to starting to shoot. When you've got this Kitty Werthmann woman out there calling for bloody resistance...
Mm-hmm.
buy guns, buy more guns, buy ammunition, buy more ammunition. And there was a news story out, what, just a few days ago, Kevin, that said America's ammunition makers are working double shifts?
Oh, yeah.
They can't crank out enough bullets to satisfy the bloodlust of the American right wing. Because, remember, this is, you know, this is that weirdo 20% dead-ender crowd, and they've got the 20%. And they've got the ammunition and gun manufacturers working till there's smoke coming out of the presses and dies.
Oh yeah, I know that. I can see that happening. I can definitely see that happening.
I think, and you know, I'm still just stultified by this Facebook profile or Facebook poll. You know, should Obama be killed? They're to the point that they are actually out there actively asking that question. And by asking the question, they are inferring and insinuating that the answer is yes. You know, this Darren Blackford is a Secret Service spokesman, and he said, we take these things seriously. We're aware of the poll, and we will take the appropriate investigative steps.
Well, the thing is, again, it's what he represents. He represents the possibility of globalized civilization where everybody has a say. And for a lot of these people, it's hard for them to grasp.
Indeed.
It really is.
Well, we got to make it easier.
Well, the thing is, I try to break it down because a lot of them call themselves born-again Christians or so-called born-again Christians. And like I said, you know, when Christ did his Sermon on the Mount and said, love thy neighbor, he didn't say love thy neighbor who just happened to look like you.
Yeah.
He said, love thy neighbor regardless.
Yeah, love thy neighbor, period.
Period. And loving thy neighbor means, and when it's easy to love your neighbor when he looks like you, practices the same religion, and you know.
Well, exactly.
Okay, when it really matters is when somebody who doesn't look like you, who may not be of the same religion, like Mahatma Gandhi said, which is basically, you know, I know the way out of hell.
Yeah.
You remember that line?
Yes, I do. And you know what? It would do people, you know, you talk about that love, you know, and he didn't just say love thy neighbor. He said love your enemy.
Yeah.
And Gandhi said the same thing. And I would recommend to anyone listening to this program, take a few minutes. You'll find it online. Go read Plato's Symposium. Won't take you long. Yeah. But you will find the same ideas expressed in there. Again, 300 years before the alleged birth of Christ.
Yeah. It's a universal truth.
It's easy to love someone that you should naturally love. The real work comes when you try to love people that everything tells you you ought not.
Exactly. And that was the issue that I had, you know, when I did my travels across America, is that, you know, I thought, not to brag, but I try to be decent to all human beings.
Yeah.
Even when it's a struggle, even when I can see the hatred, they.
Yeah, even when everything you know says no. Right. Hey, Kevin, we're running out of time, brother. Got to roll on, but
okay,
good hearing from
bro.
You. I don't know where the show went, man. I looked up and boom, it's almost 9 o'clock.
Yeah, man. Okay, brother.
All right, later.
Bye.
Bye now. And I've still got a bunch of blinking lights, and I apologize, but. The show is pretty much at an end, and I don't want to try to auctioneer my way through a phone call with you and hustle you through. So, you know, try in tomorrow night, and I'm sure we'll find time, plenty of time for conversation. Some conversation going on in the chat room, noting that I guess Ken Burns, the National Parks, is showing tonight. The right wing has called him a socialist over that documentary, by the way. Everybody's a socialist, dude. And you know what? That's the way it was with the fascists. If you weren't with them, hey, wait, where have we heard this before? If you're not with us, you're against us? That's the fascist way. And by the way, yeah, I screwed it up again. The quote about fascism will come to America wrapped in a flag and carrying a Bible. I messed it up again. One of these days I'm going to, I don't know, maybe I got to get off the cheap cough syrup or something. But yeah, Sinclair Lewis, 1935 is what I'm told in the chat room. It's the 28th day of September. We're going to wind up this month in about something approaching a $600 or $700 hole. It would be nice if we could close that gap a little bit more. Thank you to those of you who stepped up and helped us make that gap as small as it is. And you did in many numbers. And everybody associated with the horn appreciates your efforts. If there is anyone out there who can help close that gap a little bit more before October the 1st, it would be manifestly appreciated. Because, well, we can't operate on good intentions. We just can't. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. The address, the snail mail address, if you want to send it in that way, is also there as well. I want to say once again how good it is to be back this evening. Cross your fingers. I hope to be back again tomorrow night. I'm still not, I don't know if you can hear it or not. I don't know if it shows in my voice. But I'm not fully back up to speed. But I'm going to try to be here again tomorrow night because this beats the dickens out of being out of my mind on nasty cough syrup and floating in and out of bizarre dreams. You guys are wonderful. And thank you. Thank you for your emails, your phone calls. Thank you for your participation in the chat room. It's free, you know. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Just got to go there, register, jump right in. Wonderful time had by all. Thanks to John Fox. I had an email from Peter Godbold. And he is recovering nicely. And said to send his regards to all of you. Did me good to hear from Peter and know he's feeling some better. He's going to continue getting better. And I'm sure we'll hear from him at some point. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. Most of what we know as liberal talk would not exist had not Ben Birch started the White Rose Society back in 2002. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. You know the work they do, and you know why I say what I say about them, and you know that it's not just a slogan. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Goodness gracious, am I glad to be back behind the microphone. Welcome to this Monday edition of The Horn. It is the 28th day of September 2009. I am not fully back to speed, but you know what? One can only wallow around in the muck and the misery of the swine flu for so long before you have to come back to work. And as I suspect, you guys will probably make me feel better than you will worse, which is usually, I mean, that's always the case here. I feel kind of too icky to get behind the microphone, and I get behind the microphone anyway, and then you guys make me feel all better. So let's hope that continues to work in that fashion this evening. Now, I'm not kidding. Apparently, Agnes and I have had a nice, really high-quality dose of the swine flu. Although around here and around most of the country, you'll notice it isn't being called the swine flu anymore. No, 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 children, no. Now it's an upper respiratory infection. And at the risk of getting some email from somebody who hates the mere mention of it, let me tell you where the light kind of went on for me. I was watching college football on Saturday, as is my wont in the fall, when I tuned over to the match between the University of Kentucky Wildcats and the Florida Gators, led by their Heisman Trophy candidate senior quarterback, Jesus H. Tebow. And, of course, the beginning of the story, the pregame babble, had to do with the fact that Jesus H. Tebow had been exposed to an upper respiratory infection earlier in the week and had to fly up on a separate plane so as to hopefully keep from infecting the rest of his team. He sort of self-quarantined in an act of self-sacrifice or something like that. You know, he's a big fundamentalist, you know, believes that the Earth is slightly younger than the recipe for bread, that kind of guy. Jesus H. Tebow. And so I sat there listening, and something was going kind of sideways inside my tiny little mind, because I kept hearing, because it was obvious that they were talking about the swine flu, which, of course, if you're paying attention to your corporate communications memoranda from Smithfield Meat Company, the overarching food conglomerate giant that apparently runs just about every kind of meat in this country. The idea we're this business about, well, you know, it's the miracle of the marketplace. Bull. There's no competition anymore. Four or five corporations own everything. Don't want to, you know, you're worried about the way Smithfield treats their hogs, so you think, well, you know, I'll get a different brand. I'll go get Cumberland Gap brand ham. Wrong! Smithfield owns them. Well, maybe I won't go with ham. Maybe I'll go have me a butterball turkey. Wrong! Smithfield owns them. Well, okay, how about some kielbasa and sauerkraut? Hey, Eckrich is a good brand. No, Smithfield owns them, too. This is, you see, for anybody who actually studies this kind of stuff, capitalism run wild eventually becomes communism. Unregulated capitalism eventually becomes a command economy where the one entity runs everything. Like Walmart, like Smithfield.
And so at some filthy lagoon full of pig goo somewhere in Mexico, the unmitigated, untrammeled desire for more holy profit bred up a viral yuck that has spread all over creation. And on Saturday, watching pregame coverage of Jesus H. Tebow and the Florida Gators, it was all, well, he has an upper respiratory infection that has struck a number of the Florida, University of Florida squad, and it's running around the nation, blah, 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 blah. And they won't say swine flu, which is what it is. Hell, they won't even say H1N1 anymore, because this pandemic is all over the blessed country. It is eating us up, and nobody's supposed to mention it. Hey. You see the 900-pound thing over in the corner, walking on its knuckles, eating a lot of bananas and celery? Don't talk about it. Our doctor told us that down in the little community at the foot of the mountain, some 20, 30 miles from here, that they have so many cases of this that they have stopped counting. I mean, at that point in time, if you're of a certain age and you're like me, this thing goes through your head where you hear, bring out your dead, honk, bring out your dead, I'm not dead yet. I mean, it is. It's a pandemic. And it is killing some people. And the ones it's not killing, it is making awfully, awfully sick. See, the way this happened, well, if you go back and you listen to last Monday's program, you will hear me say, you know, I think it's allergy season. You'll hear me say that, you know, that my eyes are watering, my nose is running, and there's several, excuse me, I have to sneeze now, pauses and silences in the program that you could drive a truck through. Well, by the time Tuesday rolled around, it was pretty obvious that this was not any kind of allergy, because by then, my toenails were hurting. By Wednesday, I had coughed so much that I had bruised my own ribs, or pulled muscles in my ribs. Sweating, all just nasty. The